welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Carpcast. How are we doing, Matt?
We're doing fine. The Carpcast is nearly a pensioner.
What do we get? Do we get something free?
I don't know. Do we know? We have a bus pass.
Can we retire? Can we just stop?
Concessionary licences?
Can we stop at 65, not have to do any more?
Oh, imagine the punishment we'd get. We get enough as it is.
Tell me about it. What was the last one? Is the Carpcast going bi-weekly? Because we were like a day late.
Yeah, it's kind of flattering in one way.
Yes, it certainly is. We're glad people still like it. In fact, the boost in figures. Did we do a 50,000 announcement? We did, didn't we? I think yeah, we finished up with 53,000 for 53,000 downloads for October, beating our previous best of like 44 or something the previous month. It just jumped 9,000. I can only assume it's jumped because of the snowball effect. Obviously, when the 70-pound fish, which we have got some stuff to talk about in this show actually, when that 70-pound fish was announced and the controversy and everything, I mean, I remember speaking to the guys at Carp Talk and they were saying that was their best-selling issue for a long, long time, just because, you know, the news and the controversy and everything people want to know. That was our best ever Carpcast, and or so we thought. But the difference is when people find the Carpcast, they then find that all the other previous episodes are completely free, and by clicking subscribe on your podcast app or in the iTunes store or wherever you do it, you get all the other 62 episodes absolutely free, delivered direct to your phone. We obviously picked up a shed load of people downloading, you know, previous episodes and stuff, so I can only assume that's why we jumped 9,000 downloads from September to October, when nothing specific happened in October, did it? It was just our usual quality guests that we have on. Nothing, there was nothing news-wise that was particularly controversial, but it just goes to show that the power of the podcast, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that back issues are, or episodes in our case, are readily available there. Now, you mentioned the £70 gave us a boost. Well, that coincided with my on the bank chat with Jules, so me and Jules are going to take credit for that.
Yeah, well, Jules is worthy of it. He does a fantastic amount for angling, and he's going to be at the Northern Angler Show hosting our rig clinic both days, Saturday and Sunday, which is the 1st and 2nd of April. I'll tell you a bit more about the Northern Angler Show later because we've got loads going on in that. Should we get straight into this £70 debate? We did mention it last week, didn't we, with this Angling Times competition and the, you know, it's Angler of the Year time of year, isn't it? Mm. We mentioned it last week. What are your general feelings upon this Angler of the Year?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Well, my own personal opinion, it does not affect me in the slightest, and good luck to who wins, but I'll be honest, I don't pay that much attention, and if I wasn't making the notes for the podcast last week, I probably wouldn't have even looked.
No, to give my opinion, I think that it's, you know, fishing, it can be competitive in the fact that, you know, there are matches and stuff, but generally it's a very personal thing, isn't it? We've got fishing for different reasons. Sometimes I want to catch pasties to get a bite. Sometimes I want to have fun with my mates and not really bothered if I catch or not. Sometimes I want to hunt down a big fish. Sometimes I want to catch numbers of fish. It's like, it's a bit of a different things at different times, even for the same person, let alone different people. So to actually try and award or pick somebody who's had the best results during the course of a year, I think it's a bit wrong. Oh, no, I just don't know how you can do it without causing controversy. Now, I'm guessing with the magazines and stuff, and it's a talking point for us as well now, that that's the exact reason why to do it. You know, it's a slow news time of year, I guess. The water's colder, the weather's colder, there's not as much fish getting caught. But in some cases, it can do damage, such as Carpcast friend Tom Doherty, or Doherty, depending on how you pronounce his name. Should ask him really which one it is. I've heard from him this week. Now, there's obviously a lot of talk. Carp Talk are trying to do, trying to make it a bit of fun, their carp angler thing, where they're basically putting two people up at a time and you have to vote for one or the other. Which they keep saying it's fun, but I'm not really sure it's ever going to give you an accurate reflection. It's basically a popularity contest. You know, you put two guys up there. If you're mates with one guy, you can't really vote for the other guy, even if you think his capture is more meritable. Like, because, you know, one of them's your mate, and he's going to see that you've voted for the other guy, isn't he? So, because you have to put, you know, you have to put someone's name in the post underneath. So it's not like you can never, you know, anonymously vote because you actually think, you know, this other capture is more meritable than your pal's capture. You can't do it because everyone sees. So I don't know, that's a bit of a weird way of doing it. They're saying it's just fun, but I don't know what they're going to do with this at the end of it. Put all the, you know, the votes together of whoever wins the heads up contest, as it were. And then put them in for the actual annual yearly thing. The Angling Times one is just laughable, where, you know, they've picked stuff like two different captures of Big Rig they've had. Now, obviously, one of those captures is Tom. You know, all round nice lad, goes fishing for pleasure and happened to catch that fish, you know, that didn't even live in that lake when he bought the ticket. Who I know has received personal threats, hate, and God knows what, and is probably quite happy it all died down again. Until last week, when Angling Times decided to do exactly that. Following on from Angling Times, you know, putting him up, he said to me today that he would not accept any sort of accreditation, award, anything. He would not accept it, you know, anyway. Like, and he's pretty disappointed that it's even been mentioned, because it's just started off all this hate for him again. And he, you know, he's also been having emails back and forwards with Corder, because even the post that Corder made this year, which didn't directly mention his capture, but it kind of does very strongly indirectly, because they basically put a picture up of the current British record, which is the parrot from Wasing, Dean Fletcher's capture at, what was it, 68 something. They put a picture of that up, and it with the comment, "We think this is the best capture of 2016." Now, even that post in itself has started off all the hate for Tom again, to the point of where he's had to contact Corder, and he's had some emails back and forwards with him. You know, Tom's actually fishing on a lake in France currently, and he did not deserve the attention that he got, you know, for just going fishing, essentially. I did ask Tom if he would come on, but he's not really keen to put his head up there. He's had enough of all this, and I don't blame him. He's just actually sent me a message back now. I said, "Do you want to come on and say a few words?" He doesn't. He doesn't want this attention, doesn't want this publicity, and he never asked for it. And has had some quite frankly deplorable stuff said about him, but yeah, I mean, you know, the Corder post implied it was a two horse race between Dean and, you know, his capture of Big Rig, which just isn't true. Like, you can't even compare them, and they shouldn't be compared. The whole thing's a farce, and it's dragging up unnecessary hate. And Tom made a quite frank comment that, you know, the sad thing is that they got more publicity of that post they made this weekend about, you know, "We consider Dean Fletcher's capture," more than they did for their 25 rap challenge, which they've been hammering for quite some time, you know, which is basically a sad state of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a reflection on the, well, on carp anglers in general. There's no way of going away from it. It's, you know, you give the idiot's a platform, which is Facebook is, and the idiocy comes through.
Should we just ban all kind of, you know, awards in fishing? Do we need it? I remember there used to be a Northwest Angler of the Year years ago. You know, it was it like, it's not something you can ever compare two things. You know,
that, I mean, the Carpcast Awards then.
You know, I'm led to believe, I could be wrong here, but I've been told by somebody who was there that, you know, the actual British record capture was caught with a bait boat. Now, see, we, you know, I've used bait boats, you know, I've absolutely no problem with using a bait boat in certain circumstances, but should we be counting a fish as a British record if it is caught with a bait boat? What if that bait boat was remote GPS? I'm guessing it wasn't, but, you know, looking forward to the future, you know, if fish are caught by pure technology, maybe a, you know, a GPS to a spot with an underwater camera, making sure it's firmly presented, you know, there's no casting, there's no rod and line, as it were, apart from dragging the fish in. Should, you know, should that be counted as a record? Should we even have a record?
No, I don't think we should, because we've been down this technology thing before, and it, you know, it's, does a carp count if it's caught on a, you know, high tech carbon rod and not a split cane?
This is the point, you know, the fact that we don't have to sit there watching a bobbin anymore, or a swing tip or a butt indicator, because we've got electronic alarms that tells us when the fish has hooked itself. You know, or the fact that our bait isn't even on a hook, it's on a hair instead of actually on the hook. Or, you know, there's a million ways you could go with technology to advance fishing. They all advance it for enjoyment. You know, I enjoy being more comfortable when I go fishing. I enjoy having nice rods to play fish on and nice reels to cast and, you know, line that doesn't break. You know. I enjoy technology, but, you know, when we're starting to actually count records and document stuff, I don't know, I think we should document how big fish can grow in this country, but to award somebody something for it, then you open up this other can of worms, don't you?
Jamie's rant.
Yeah, you do. I mean, again, all these Christmas awards, these annual awards, it's just a ploy for magazines and papers to sell more copies, to, you know, like you said, at this time of year when not a lot's happening, the weather's crap, it's, don't know about you over in Blackpool, but it's been chucking it down all day over here. And they just want to, you know, create a bit of interest, sell a few more copies, and who can blame them?
Anyway, so the annual Carpcast Awards will be held at the Northern Angling Show in April.
You know, we'd like you to vote and on the Carpcast page for your favourite carp fishing podcast.
I'll tell you what, actually, Heapy Bob started a bit of a thread on the official Carpcast fan page. How podcasts get rated in iTunes is by people leaving reviews. It doesn't matter if them reviews are good or bad, the fact that you get an interaction with iTunes bumps you up the podcast list. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a Christmas number one, a fishing podcast was the number one podcast on iTunes? I wouldn't mind being awarded that. Should we start a campaign for a Christmas number one?
What, a bit like Rage Against Machine did a few years back, or the people did on their behalf, Rage Against the X Factor. What are we going to do? Rage Against Joe Rogan and Mark Maron, who have millions and millions of downloads each episode.
Just Rage Against the podcast. So if you want to slate us on iTunes or big us up and give us 5 stars, whatever, it would definitely help. It'd help fishing podcasts in general, paving the way for anybody else. You know, somebody contacted me a while back saying they wanted to do the Course Cast and would I mind if they used that name. I was like, no, go for it. And that was nearly a year ago now. I haven't seen it emerge yet, but, you know, we welcome anybody else doing sort of more media like this. There's people asking me if I will release audio books of books. Yeah, somebody messaged me yesterday actually saying, would I do an audio version of Holness's book when it came out? Now I think, I don't know how comfortable people are doing this, but, you know, if I was going to listen to an audio version of Oz Holness's book, I'd want Oz Holness telling the story, not me. But it's an idea. I can make that happen. Any people out there with books, you know, I can either read the book for you. I'm open to negotiation, basically. I can do it for you, or I can record you doing it. Anybody fancies but I think audio fishing books, I mean, are there any that you're aware of?
Well, there's lots of audio books out there. I'm sure there will be some fishing ones if we actually look, but I've never actually looked, to be honest, so I can't answer that.
Yes.
No,
definitely something you can look into. You know, I was speaking to Kevin about it, maybe doing Kevin's, because you can actually buy Kevin's book on the Carpcast website now, www.thecarpcast.com. It's in our shop, along with all sorts of other stuff. And it's the cheapest price you can buy his book anywhere as well. In our shop, you can also get the Key Cray. It's the only place you can currently buy it. I don't know how long this offer will last for. Apparently, a few of the shops are complaining and stuff that they can't sell it. It's officially released in May. If you do buy it from us, although we may have to stop advertising it, I still guarantee that you'll be able to continue using it until it's released, whenever that is in the spring. So if you would like to head over to thecarpcast.com, there's a 10 kilo package currently, and it's only £80 or £79.99 delivered to your door. It comes with a tub of pop-ups. There's an option in there to buy extra pop-ups and dip as well if you want the signal arouser dip. You can get 15ml, 20ml, or they do a pack which is 5 key of 20 and 5 key of 15, with the tub of 15ml pop-ups. So get yourself over to the Carpcast shop to have a look for them, and I don't know how long this offer is going to be going on for, so make the most of it now. But you know, I was saying to Kevin about, you know, why don't you just do it, let me do an audio version of your book, because it has been requested. And he's like, I don't know if it'll harm normal sales, if you know what I mean, people will just get an audio version of it. I don't know, it's worth looking into. I think when I finally finish my own book, I'll definitely do an audio version of it. Lots of people like audio, you know, for travelling, don't they? Driving, if you do a lot of driving, or got a night job, or you work in the factory. You know, the messages we get off people of how they listen to the podcast, how it makes time fly and stuff. You know, the more content, the better on audio. So we support any other fishing podcast, we support any other audio books, or even if you just got a decent podcast to listen to that might not be fishing, then always let us know. We'll stick it in the worth a look. But yeah, as we went off on a tangent once again, you know, for Tom, this has certainly dragged up a lot of unwanted stuff yet again, you know, all over social media. And we know how powerful social media is these days, so I don't think he's particularly happy. As I said, he's had a few emails back and forth with Corda. I mean, you know, while Corda didn't mention him, obviously it's going to stir up that controversy again, isn't it? You know, just by saying we think this is the best capture, obviously people are going to go, well, isn't that bloody 70 pounder, is it? You know, and other such more hateful stuff. So Tom certainly doesn't deserve this. You know, it certainly isn't his doing. He went fishing, caught a fish that probably wasn't in that lake when he bought the ticket. So, I don't know. Other stuff on the net this week, there's been a pretty big one, hasn't there, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Oh, yeah. Was it Pastegate, you call it?
Pastegate. Yes, arguing over wrapping paste around boilies and selling them, and who did it first. For any of you living underground may have missed this. Carpcast favourite, chap that's, you know, always stirs up a lot of debate on the Carpcast, and is a very welcome guest. I'm sure we'll be due to have him on again soon. Pretty sure we'll be getting angry texts when he's listened to this one. Is Mark Holmes. Mark Holmes made a number of posts this week. He definitely put the cat amongst the pigeons, didn't he? He definitely instigated what turned into a row on social media. He's referring to the DNA Evos, which are the cured hook bait kits that they do, where basically you you get a liquid and a powder, and it's salt cured, and you mix it and wrap it round their hook baits, and basically make your own. It's like an extra layer. It's basically wrapping paste around a boilie. It's a night. Mark's been big on the salt and stuff, and you know, DNA released these Evos, I don't know when, a year or two ago maybe. They've definitely had them all the time we've been doing the Carpcast. Now, Nash released their marketing for the cultured hook baits. Now Nash do a lot of cultured hook baits, but the one that the first time they've ever really gone to town on the market in was this week, where they've released their winter version, which is the citrus, which is basically a sweet fruity type pop-up, a sweet fruity bait is a citrus flavour bait. Citrus cultures are doing it with like a fizzing stick mix. They released the marketing for that. They've pretty much gone for it with the marketing. There's a nice video and stuff, and Holmes has seen that, and basically he hasn't named Nash, but he might as well have done, as his post actually says, well, I've seen another ripoff of the DNA Evos plastered all over social media. I hope most anglers can see these ripoff merchants as simple copycats, irrespective of being a big company. So he's referring them to him being a big company on the day the Nash release theirs. Quite clearly, he's having a pop at Nash, although he doesn't actually name them, which is part of the problem as well, because everybody else named them in all the comments and all the arguing that ensued. So I think, firstly, I mean, what do you think about him not naming them, but basically saying who they are? I mean, that's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're going to come out and make something like that, just say the names. Everyone else can see it. It doesn't take much figuring out. And I think he just wanted other people to name them for him.
Yeah, and then as to some degree hid behind it saying, I didn't name it. Well, I mean, if you're going to call somebody out publicly, then, you know, at least have the balls to do it properly. And when everybody else clearly knows who you're referring to, and have made many references to that in the comments underneath, then, you know, if you're going to call somebody out, and he didn't just call them out once, he then did it again in another post. You know, he goes on to say, if the boot was on the other foot, they'd be going mad. Originality these days seems to be let's ridicule what when it comes out first from somebody else, and then we start copying it, claim to be the best original edge in the bait game. Fucking believable. Start out, yeah, we know what we're talking about, lads, don't we? Now, first of all, Mark's wrong, because Nash have had the cultured hook. First of all, the Nash cultured hook baits are nothing to do with salt curing, which the DNA Evos are. They're called cultured because they actually grow them. The reason why they're so expensive is because it's like an active paste full of, I don't know the technical science of what's behind it, but I know they actually wrap these things, and then they leave them like on trays, almost like, you know, like remember in the science classes where you grow stuff on these trays, you remember at school? They basically do this, and they actually grow from, you know, they wrap them at like 15 mil and they end up being like 24 mil, some of these, because of this active stuff that's around it. The thinking behind wrapping paste around boilies is basically when you boil stuff, you lose all the aminos, all the bits and bats inside it, all the attraction, you know, you're basically dulling it all down by the boiling process. So Nash came up with this this, you know, coating that actually it actually grows, you know, it's some sort of reactants in it, I don't know, yeasts, and I don't really know the science behind it, but Nash have had these out for 2 years. You know, I caught the 50 and the 48 that I had last January on the key cultured hook baits. They were the first ones. They've then done the cultured hook baits in all their other flavour boilies, the 4G squid and everything, that have been out for quite some time. And only Mark Holmesy cannot have been aware of this, because he's seen this one, this citrus cultured hook baits, and done his nut, basically saying he's been copied. Which, first of all, how on earth, like, if you're wrapping paste around a hook bait, whether it's salt cured or whatever, I mean, what, you're telling me that you were the first person to wrap a paste around a hook bait and sell it? Come on. But, you know, we were doing that 30 years ago. So, first of all, nobody's ripped anybody off. Secondly, I'm wondering if the reason why DNA actually sell the kits where you actually do it yourself is because there is actually a patent on wrapped hook baits owned by a German company who Nash actually pay out of respect. You know, when they release theirs, such a big company as Nash, when they release something, they have to find out if somebody else has a patent on whatever they're doing, because they're going to get sued if they infringe somebody else's patent. It's just part of being a company that size. You ain't going to get away with it. They found out that a German company actually has the patent on it, and they, out of respect, pay this German company to be able to release their cultured hook baits, which are nothing like anybody else's. They were a completely original idea came up with by Keith Sykes. You know, as I say, they actually grow these things in trays. You know, they hand roll them and then leave them to react, and you know, they expand and do whatever they do, which is why it gives off all that attraction when they put them in the waters. I'm sure the DNA ones are completely great. DNA are a really good company, but I just don't understand why Holmesy's had this pop. He's called them out, and then he's done it in another post the following day by putting a picture up, the DNA cured ones, saying he had them on test 9 and 5 years ago. Well, first of all, you know, I'm sure people were rapping baits in other stuff way longer than 5 years ago, and he's put a picture of it up, you know, two separate posts that particular day. Nashy had no idea. He didn't even know the Evo hook baits existed, because there isn't a patent on it, so they wouldn't have come up when he did his when they did their research to release their own ones. As I say, the cultures have been out a couple of years, and I know it's something Keith Sykes has been working on for years. So Holmesy had a pop, Nashy's had a pop back, and he have quite a pop back. He's basically said that Holmesy had actually been down to Nashy's asking for a job. He didn't get offered the job that he wanted, but they did offer him a consultancy, and Holmesy never got back to him. But Holmesy went down there for a proper job, I think. They sat in the boozer for a period of time chatting, and I'm assuming what Holmesy's thought is that, you know, they've sat there, he's gone down for a job, he's been knocked back on the job that he wanted, and then he's noticed this advert for the citrus cultured hook baits, probably didn't know about the previous cultures that Nash have had out for a couple of years, and thought he'd been ripped off, and then went public on it. And then Nashy had a reaction. I know, I've spoke to Kevin about it, and it's a reaction he's not proud of. You know, in his own admission, it doesn't do carp fishing any favours, you know, for two people like that, two respected people, to have a pop at each other in public. But and then Holmesy's reaction to Nash's reaction is basically saying, you could have just picked up the phone. Well, you know, I might say that to you, Mark, you know, before you decided to post this stuff on Facebook, you know, make two posts, very antagonistic, basically calling Nash out. You know, why didn't you ring him first? You know, it's all very well if he's reacted a little bit stronger. Quite frankly, it doesn't look good for either of you, I don't think. And it definitely doesn't look good for you when you've been down there. You know, the old saying that people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. If you've been in an approach, Nashy, about a job, and then you're going to call Nashy out and expect that not to come out in the wash. I mean, that seems a bit naive to me. Seems very naive. Anyway, I've ranted a little bit. What's your thoughts, Mark?
Jimmy's rant!
Well, a few again. It's one of those things where I just kind of... Well, to quote a phrase, get the popcorn, just watch things kind of transpire. But yeah, I'm with you, it doesn't do either of them any favours. I thought Nash's comeback, I can see why he did it, but it was well, it had quite a bit of venom in there, to be honest. You know, Mark Holmes obviously angered him to do it, and it does look like it was done out of anger. But also, two people arguing about it, like I said to you the other day, it's like Ford having a go at Volkswagen saying, fuck off, we invented the wheel. Neither of them did.
Exactly.
These little round balls. I want to go back in time, patent the boilie, then get every boilie company to pay me a loyalty, and then I'll be set for life.
I know from Nash, and this is obviously going to sound like it coming from a Nash guy, but I try and be open-minded about everything in life, you know. And while I've been with Nash 15 years, like if there's something I didn't agree with, I would say. And if there's a product I didn't like, I would say. And, you know, if it's a product I like by another company, I will quite happily say, you know, I'd be more than happy using that, or I do use that, or whatever. You know, I try to be, although most people probably think, oh yeah, James with Nash, but he's going to say that. Nash do try and be original. They don't just bring your product out to be the same. You know, they try and tweak something, adapt it, make it better than the previous one. You know, Nash has been responsible for so many things we take for granted in fishing now, you know, and didn't have patents on them. You know, his original rucksacks, the Happy Hooker rod hold all, every single company in the fishing company in the world's got a version of that, which he probably would never have had to have worked again if he'd have patented that when he first came up with the idea. I mean, there's so much he did give us, and there's so much crossover in fishing. Like, you know, everybody's trying to come up with original things, but you know, a twist on a new bay. I mean, how many times can you do the boilie? Like, you can't. You know, DNA have had a great idea with the salt-cured wrap. You know, Nash have got a cultured thingy that actually grows and gives off natural attraction because it's stuff that's generating naturally. I'm sure another company, I'm sure the German company's got a little twist on it themselves. It's not, how can you say someone's copied something? They haven't. Everybody's looking for something that works and is good. You know, and I do know that because of the size of Nash, they have to do their research on stuff. You know, which is legal return, it's patents and copyrights and stuff like that, you know, and clearly there is no copyright on these Evos, otherwise it would have flagged up. Not to mention, they're nothing like each other. One's a salt-cured hook bait that comes in a kit that you make yourself. The other one's, you know, I mean, it's not even a straight-up paste. It's some active bloody thingy that just as soon as you immerse it in water, it starts, like, leaking stuff off everywhere. No, to me, you know, they're about as similar as, I don't know, mainline sellers to Nash Scopex Squid. It's just a completely different item. It just happens to be round and we put it on the end of our hook. But I don't know, I mean, we didn't need this. Holmesy had been quiet on social media for a little while, and I mean, what's your opinion of this? Does seem to be the same, you know, Holmesy is a very outward thinking person. He thinks outside the box. He does come up with stuff. You know, we've had a controversy with him before with the live baiting for fish, but his MO of these kind of social media posts do seem to be very similar, don't they, Mark?
Yeah, he does seem to like a bit of conflict online. Then, but then he always seems to, you know, the posts following always seem to be the same, trying to get people on his side, like he's the victim, when in reality he's the antagonist.
That's exactly how I feel, and sorry Holmesy, I know you're probably going to listen to this, but that does it. There's been two or three occasions now where that is how it feels. It seems like you stick yourself in the middle of some controversy, you know, with the outlying thing is I'm out the box, I'm original, I'm doing stuff that no one else is doing. Then there's some sort of argument, then it's I'm being victimized by, you know, all these hateful messages that I'm getting, and, you know, or quite often the North v South thing. And it does kind of feel there's a bit of a pattern, doesn't there, Mark?
Yeah, you just mentioned, you know, going to have a slightly different take. You just mentioned North v South thing, and, you know, Mark Arms often, you can often quote him, and he refers to the click and the golden triangle, and oh, sorry, Mark, but I think that's in your mind because, yeah, I'm a northerner. I've fished alongside and amongst some of the, you know, people from everywhere, and I've met some wonderful people from down south, and I have not encountered any of this cliquey, you know, southerners of southern fish are better than anywhere. You know,
sorry, no, mate, I have to agree. I never feel, I don't feel like that at all. And like I say, I think, you know, Mark's got his fans. Everybody controversial on Facebook has their fans that, you know, they're just like, you're the best, fuck the haters, you know, do what you're doing, we know you're the best. And there does seem to be a lot of self-promotion here in this stuff, isn't there? And I don't know, I think he might have bitten off a little more. It's worked pretty well for him in the past. I think he might have just rattled the cage he probably didn't want to rattle. And as I said, there are the people in glass houses don't throw stones. If you've been to Nash for a job and then, you know, and then you've called Nash out on Facebook, and that, it has annoyed me where he's tried to hide behind the fact of, oh, I didn't name the company, there was no need for this reaction. I mean, you might as well have named the company. Like, if you didn't think there was going to be a reaction to this, then you were pretty naive. Now, I don't necessarily agree with the reaction. I know Kevin's pretty disappointed with how he reacted, but he's a human being and he was attacked publicly. He wasn't, you know, Holmesy didn't pick up the phone and have it out with him. He publicly attacked him. And the other thing that's annoyed me about what Holmesy's saying here is, I have the right to print any opinion I like on my private Facebook. Well, no, you don't. You have a responsibility because it's not your private Facebook. You are publishing. In fact, you're publishing, if you've got 5,000 plus friends plus a fan page, you're actually publishing to a readership bigger than the majority of magazines. There ain't many magazines that sell 5,000 a week or a day. You know, you are publishing to the public. You know, the reason why the posts actually say publish, you have a responsibility for what you post because it isn't private. You're speaking to every single person that's on your Facebook. Your posts are not marked as private as well for friends only. So friends of friends see them. You might have a reach of 20, 30, 40,000 people, bigger than any magazine in this country when you make a controversial post like that. So no, it's not your private Facebook, and you're not entitled to say what the hell you like on there and not expect repercussion. You've got a responsibility, especially when you're a name and a popular name in fishing. So, you know, that there's two things that annoy me about what Mark put here. And, you know, I'm honest. I say the truth. And Mark's welcome to his right to reply anytime he wants to come on this show. He's a welcome guest. So, you know, this is always an open invitation. We love to hear the knowledge that you've got to drop. And we love to hear a bit of controversy. So, you know, I consider Mark a nice guy and somebody I've been friends with for a lot of years. But, you know, I'm entitled to say my piece to the public. And there was two things that annoyed me. One, trying to hide behind the fact that you didn't name the company. And two, saying you have the right to say whatever opinion you want on your private Facebook, air quotes. It's not private. You're publishing to the public. You might as well have printed it on the front page of Carp Talk, Carp World, Advanced Carp Fishing, or anyone else, because the same amount of people are going to see it. So you do have a responsibility for what you post, and it isn't private. And you of all people know that because you work social media very well. Anyway, that feels like a Jamie's rant to me.
Yeah, are we done on this now? Should we move on? Because there was even someone questioning whether we should mention this subject. Did you see that one?
No, go on.
No, so I think it was on the Heapy Bob's fan page. Someone's saying that we shouldn't even talk about it. It should be just ignored and left to die down as a sorry episode in carp fishing, and just everyone should move on. But we've kind of, that boat sailed. We've gone on about it. But let's talk about better things. You've caught a 40-pound common, haven't you?
Here we go, Mark. Did you remember that big ball of cheese that was around at its biggest last weekend?
I did. I also saw quite a lot of people slagging it off because they blanked.
Well, I had three fish. I had two fish out of the Copse Lake, both commons. Now, bearing in mind the previous three fish out, which Roger had the last time we went about a month ago, were all mirrors, didn't have any commons. We get a full moon, in fact, a super moon. And the two bites I have out of the Copse are both commons. One was an extremely nice 41.5-pound fish, which I've just got the pictures of today, actually. So I was extremely chuffed. But commons, big full moon, coincidence? I think not.
And how do you know there wasn't an even bigger mirror 6 inches away from that common, and the common sucked that bait from in front of him?
Because the mirrors were all up the other end of the lake, staying out of the way, hiding, because the commons were on the prowl, because there's a moon. The mirrors come out next week on the new moon.
Are you back down to catch them then?
I am actually down there next week. I've got 7 days down there. It's been booked for a little while. It's weather's not looking great, but I've got a social with Drew. You remember Drew? Scottish Drew?
Oh yeah, nice kid, Drew.
Yeah, well, Drew's booked some time on Church Lake. We're going down for a social with him. Roger and I are both fishing. I've got best part of a week on there. Not the greatest conditions. It's extremely cold everywhere at the minute. But there is a new moon, and there is some very large fish to be caught. I baited up before I left last week on a few spots, and I'm extremely excited to get down there. Yeah, so I'm going on Friday. And hopefully Scottish Drew will beat his PB. If you don't get a nosebleed from being that far south of Scotland.
Yeah, has he ever been this far south of the wall?
He has been. He has been abroad fishing, so I guess he has.
Well, it looks like all this winter we're going to be hearing about your catch reports and not mine. It'd be a lot more interesting if you're making regular visits down there.
Well, I do have the luxurious opportunity of basically I've sorted a deal with Kevin where I can fish the winter. And I'm going to fish hard. I haven't done a winter campaign for a lot of years, and if you're going to do one, what a place to do it on. So I expect to be documenting this on the Carpcast fairly regularly.
We're going to get some in-session features for the extra as well.
Certainly. You've just reminded me. I started an in-session last week and never finished it. I got up to where I caught the 41 and then forgot to do any more. I've got half an in session. I've got the trip down there, I've got the setting up, and I've got the fish.
Yeah, it's weird you think, because it's only literally, you know, 2-3, 4 minutes at a time talking into your phone to record a little soundbite. But when I've done it, it's so easy to forget because you're just busy. You're doing some other things. You're fishing. You're walking around. You're looking. You think, oh, yeah, I'll best record it. And usually when I've done them, I've got to the end of the session and recorded about 5. It just never seems quite the same.
Anyway, that's enough controversy for one episode, don't you think? We've been like 50 minutes and we haven't even had an advert yet.
Yeah.
I tell you what, it's an Americanism. It's Black Friday, is it? This Friday?
Oh, tell me about it. I spent all day at work getting everything ready. It's Black Friday week.
Well, Gifts for Anglers are a sponsor of the Carpcast currently. They're perfect to get yourself some gifts in the lead up to Christmas. There are discounts for Carpcast listeners as well as an extra 10% off all purchases made at giftsforanglers.co.uk if you enter the code CARPCAST10 when you check out. But superseding that one, there is a 10%. They've got a Black Friday discount sale, which is 10% discount. Yeah, so it's the same. You can use one code or the other. What we'd rather you use the Carpcast code. So I'm not even going to tell you about the Black Friday sale, because the Black Friday sale is the equivalent of the sale that you can have every single time if you use the code CARPCAST10 when you check out. Just to tell you a bit about Gifts for Anglers, they're the largest online shop for fishing books, DVDs and gifts. They stock hundreds of carp books and DVDs, from the latest releases to old age favourites. They stock clothing, headwear from top brands such as Fox Chunk, Fat Fish, Navitas, Tracker, Corder, Mainline, Nash, Fortis, Monkey Climber. Some of this week's additions to the shops are the new Monkey Climber Navy and Black Cousteau beanies, as well as the Black Mug. They also have the Ridge Monkey utensil sets, which fit inside the toasters, and two new headwear items and a new hoodie for the winter from Fat Fish. There's hundreds of carpy angling related gifts for Christmas presents, birthday presents, socks, mugs, personalized front covers and carpy shaped pillows. They're also stockists of the Ridge Monkey and Tracker bankside cooking accessories. They do the Fisherflage log books, which are perfect for anglers that like to keep a detailed log of the session. They make the perfect gift at only $9.99. You can get them in carp designs or pike designs for the predator anglers there. Crowe's books in there, Adventure of a Carp Angler, Dave Levy's Fallen Kings, Every Bit of Blue by Carpcast favourite Frank Warwick, and all the Subsurface Collective books. There's also Black Mirror Cult by Mark Cunnington, who also wrote the very popular Syndicate series. This new book is the first part of Syndicate series Volume 2, which is set 10 years after the events that took place in the Syndicate's Part 7. There's a sales section as well. There's loads of bargains to be had on there. DVDs, books, gifts and clothing. A massive amount of stock with mega reductions reduced to clear. Pick up A History of Carp Fishing by Kevin Clifford, the Bible for anyone who's interested in carp fishing history. It's only 30 quid. That's a tenner off the original 40. Chris Ball's The Best of the Famous Catches, just $17.99, which is a saving of like 8 quid. Forgotten Chapters, Gaz Fairham is on offer in there as 2 for 25 instead of 30. Many other top carp titles such as Basil's Bush, Fox Pool and Tiger Bay, all the mailing books. Don't forget the extra discount, 10% discount off everything if you use the code CARPCAST10 when you check out at the website www.giftsforanglers.co.uk, and the 4 is a number 4, numerical 4, giftsforanglers.co.uk. Don't forget the code. The offer's valid until 31st of the 1st, so that's the end of January. You can check them out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at giftsforanglers as well. So yeah, thank you for supporting the Carpcast, and please do go and get your Christmas gifts for your family or whatever, or tell the missus to get you stuff from there, because they are the largest shop for everything.
Was we discussed for it was only 6 minutes,
right?
We covered a hell of a lot in 6 minutes.
Well, we'll do it for real now. So I'd like to welcome Rob Hughes back for the Ooh, feels like bi-monthly Hughes news now. How are we doing, Rob?
Yeah, it's been a while, Jay, isn't it? It's lovely to be back. Since the World Championships, things were, well, they were busy just beforehand, and yeah, remarkably busy since. There's a lot of catching up, and yeah, but back again. Loads of news as ever.
Well, I haven't spoken to you since the World Championships. I'm aware that we didn't win, so let's start there, shall we?
Yes, it was, what can you say? I'm gutted that we didn't do as well as we could have done. But we, interestingly, after the draw had taken place, we couldn't have won. And that's not making excuses. I reckon we should have been on the podium. We could have got a third. We could have got bronze. Unfortunately, we made one or two, what I would probably class as schoolboy errors on the first day. We had a game plan. And if you remember where we were at the end of day one, I couldn't believe it because we're reporting back in. I did my first video to say that, would you believe it, we're in the gold medal position. So the plan worked very, very well to begin with. However, there was a little deviation from it. One of the two lads perhaps put their foot down a little bit too quickly. And as a result, the fish hadn't settled in front of them enough. And going in with a little bit too much bait too quickly, what that did was rather than pulling them in and making them feed, it pushed them out. And it took us a while to get them back. And we did an awful lot of practice on that venue. Yeah. And we knew what to do to get the fish feeding. We knew how we had to get those fish feeding. We knew that if they weren't settled in front of you, they were quite easy to spook. But once you got them settled in front of you, they were very difficult to lose. And unfortunately, what happened was we perhaps put our foot down a little bit too early. Mixture of a number of things. I'm not going to point any fingers at anybody because it's a team effort and ultimately that responsibility lies with me. But what it meant was that the game plan worked to begin with. We went into day one in a gold medal position, then dropped down a little bit after that. There's so many nations competing this event now. It's so, so popular. There were, I think, 28 in this one? Which, you know, that's massive. As soon as you go over 25, it might have been 26, but as soon as you go over 25, they have to split the sections. And what that means is that rather than having everybody in the same section and you being able to take points off the teams that are in your section, they split it. So, for example, Romania, we didn't fish against. They weren't in any of our sections at all. Russia, we'd got in one. Lithuania, we'd got in one. France, we'd got in all three. Croatia, we didn't meet. We met in one. So, you know, when you've got the big hitters, it's a little bit like the pool games in World Championship football. If you're not in the same pool, you can't beat them. And that works very well for, and again, without being rude, it works very well for the lesser nations because the minnows can avoid the big boys. But actually, what the big boys want to do is they want to get in the same ring and have a tear up with each other. Because, you know, if you've got a split section situation, if us, France and Russia are in one section and Croatia and Romania are in another and two go through, then one's going to miss out of the three. Now, ideally, we want to be in with all of them because we want to beat the best earlier rather than later. So, you know, it's a bit of a complicated way of looking at it. But the long and short of it is that we ended up sixth on paper. We said beforehand that the top five in the world at the moment are Russia, who ended up winning, Romania, who were third, us, we ended up sixth, France were fourth, and then Croatia, who were, I think they were fifth. So, you know, the top, Lithuania came in and Lithuania tied on points with Russia at the top of the pile. Unfortunately, they lost on a countback. So Russia were individual gold medalists. Were team gold medalists. And Lithuania second, Romania third, France fourth, Croatia fifth, and us sixth. So when you look at it, you think sixth, that's a long way down. But actually, the difference between us sixth and fourth was 1 point. There was half a point between us and Croatia. There was 1 point between us and France. And really, if we hadn't made the mistake, we'd have been where Romania were. So, you know, it was whenever you go to any big sporting event, and this is the first time I've been able to actually publicly talk about it since, because it really, really hurts. where we finished. And I know a lot of the lads just disappeared to lick their wounds afterwards because we knew that we let a bit of a chance slip. But actually, when you look at the margin, that one little thing made a big difference. Now, when you look in Formula One and you see that, McLaren have beaten Mercedes by 1 point, and that 1 point is actually 0.1 of a second. The margin is so, so small. And, the same with golf. I think I've used this analogy before. Tiger Woods wins the golf, or Rory McIlroy wins the golf. Everybody, of course, remembers the winner. But if you look at the margin between first and second, it might be one shot. Now, these guys are playing 72 par courses and they're doing four rounds. So that's 288 shots.
Yeah.
And one bloke's beaten another bloke by one shot.
Yeah.
And, this event in the fishing this year, they were all saying this is one of the closest ones. And those top six teams were separated by virtually nothing. Romania got into third place. In one section, they caught 1 3-kilo fish. Now, if they hadn't caught that 1 3-kilo fish, they'd have been 10th.
Wow.
And, you can look at all of these things, what if. And everybody remembers how close the battle was last year between us and Croatia for first place. And everyone else was miles away. Mm. It was a two-horse race all the way from the start. Whereas this year, I would say the World Championships this year was probably, at the beginning, it was probably a 6 or 7 horse race. But then, the top six certainly, they all pulled away, but they were so close to each other. Russia won, and fair dues to Russia. They're a very, very good squad. This year their development has been immense. Really nice gang of lads. But they caught a fish. Remember last year when we were in that situation where we thought Spain had caught one that had knocked us down and that would have pinched Croatia, the title? That's what happened between Lithuania and Russia, that we thought Lithuania had won. And I even said in my report that Lithuania have won. But actually, we then found out that Russia actually caught one just before the Hooter.
Wow.
And that was the one that scored the tiebreak, which meant that they went on to win it. And everybody thought Lithuania had won. And it was so, 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 so close. Absolutely incredibly close. So, real, real lesson for us there as well. And it just goes to show that at top level sport, wherever you are, one foot in the wrong place at any stage, even if it's very early on in the game, that can be the difference. So, that's what we've learned from this, that you've got to be amazingly tight and stick to the game plan right from the start.
Do you think the experience has helped it being that fine, not taking things for granted maybe sometimes? Or
Absolutely. Yeah, unquestionably. Because, everybody thought, everybody, us included, that it was going to be a battle between us and the French.
Yeah.
The lake behaved itself very, very differently under the pressure that that it received. When we went there before, Jay, and I didn't talk about it too much publicly because we didn't know what people, or we didn't want anybody to know what we were doing.
Yeah.
We couldn't put a foot wrong. It was ridiculous. We went over there first and we won the Six Nations. We went back in practice. The lads were in practice sessions, they were catching 400 and 500 pounds in 48-hour practice sessions. It was ridiculous. We'd absolutely nailed the tactics on. However, as soon as you put that many people on, so there's 28 pairs. There's 28 nations, multiply that by three. What's that? 56, 76, 82, is it? So the lake was absolutely rammed. And what happened was the fish did exactly what fish do under pressure. These are natural fish in a big natural reservoir. They did exactly what they do under pressure. They moved up into the no fishing zones. They moved into the bays and they moved into the big open water. Now, I'm not grumbling for 1 minute of our peg draw. If you gave me the opportunity to get the same pegs that we drew now, I'd take it again.
Yeah,
I just think that if we twitched our tactics a little bit, then we could have still got into that third place. Once again, we'd never have won it, but we should have been on the podium.
Yeah,
the fish all piled up into the areas that they couldn't be reached, and of course the lads that were at the ends of the bays, there's three little nature reserve areas, and the lads that were at the ends up there, they all caught very, very well. But yeah, it's a learning curve that you can't take anything at all for granted. And as much as we knew that our tactics worked very well, until the lake is under that sort of pressure, you never know exactly what's going to happen. And because they were so spooky, this is where that little tactical difference of, you know, you get two or three bites and you think, oh, they're here, let's put the foot down and really, you know, really stuff this now. But actually what happened, because they were edgy, the first couple of three fish would come into the peg. We got them feeding quickly. We knew exactly what to do with them, got them going, but they were still edgy because of the pressure. And that was the one thing that we hadn't practiced, fishing the match under that sort of pressure, because of course nobody can.
That's the key I found in match fishing. Every match I've ever witnessed or been a part of, the fish do something they never normally do. And how do you recreate that situation? You know, you've got to try and guess what would they do under the most extreme pressure they've ever had. And it's hard to tell unless you've been in that situation before.
No, that's right. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that we our boys fished a good match, and England did themselves proud in that, because all of the other nations that were there, they know how difficult it was and how tight it was. And, you know, that when you look at that top five, and, you know, Lithuania sort of snuck in there, but if you look at the top five were where the top five should have been, without any shadow of doubt. Which order they were going to end up in really just depended on who was going to have the perfect storm. And like I say, if we'd have got a fourth, and fourth is probably the most disappointing position, but I think we should have been fourth. We could have had third. We should really have been fourth. If we'd have had one more fish in any section, we'd have had a fourth rather than a third. Yeah. Sorry, rather than a sixth.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's still not on the podium, which is where we want to be. But, you know, what we've done is we've established effectively that England are up there. We're still one of the top five squads. If you look at the results over the last 2 years, we still lead the way. So if you add last year's points to this year's points, we're still at the top of the pile. So, you know, it certainly wasn't a disgrace in any way, shape or form. But going over thinking this is it now, you know, we're going to be doing well on this. We've got our tactics nailed down. We did an awful lot of practice. It's going to be a toe-to-toe with the French, which effectively it was. And, you know, they ended up fourth and they were absolutely gutted. They were floored with it.
What's the fishing like in Lithuania then? I've not heard that place mentioned before.
It's nowhere near as much as, you know, they haven't got as many venues as we've got. It's typical Eastern Europe fishing, really, but more proper Eastern European fishing rather than developed Eastern European fishing, because, you know, carp over there, they don't practice no kill a lot. So what they are very good at is, I think somebody said that some of the lads that were in the Lithuanian team, and also maybe it was the Latvian team, I get the two nations mixed up sometimes, but they were talking about how some of the guys in that team were actually professional anglers.
Right.
In that, you know, they go out and they're netsmen because there's a lot of food fish out there, so on and so forth. So they understand the watercraft very, very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can never, ever, ever underestimate anyone at all. You know, look at a few years ago when everybody was thinking, well, you know, Kazakhstan are doing well, and Kazakhstan have been on the podium.
Wow.
You can't knock anybody, and I think any nation that turns around and sort of looks down at another nation is either firstly too arrogant, or secondly, you know, they're running a risk of getting a bloody nose. You never ever judge a book by the cover. And just because we've not heard of Lithuania, it doesn't mean to say they're not very good. You know, believe me, some of the watercraft that some of those guys have got is immensely better than a lot of the Western anglers. It's just the Western anglers have got the tactics and they've got the ability to be able to fish in more matches. So, you know, everybody has a different skill base, don't they? And at some stage, the most important thing will be their skill base as opposed to our skill base. And that's when they'll take an advantage on it.
I was just thinking about holiday destinations for VIP carp holidays. Lithuania, decent temperatures, big fish, lots of carp.
Yeah, it can be a bit cold at this time of year, I think, heading that way. So, you know, interesting. They're all brilliant people. That's one of the great things about it, though. You know, carp fishing just stretches across so many borders. And, you know, there's nations that have disputes with each other, and there's cultures that have disputes with each other, and there's races that have disputes with each other. But as soon as you put carp fishing rods in their hands, you know, yes, we all want to tonk each other at the park during the competition, but everybody gets together for a beer and we have a really, really good laugh with it as well. So, you know, I can't praise the French enough on this. I've got to say this publicly as well. Can't praise the French enough for how well they organised that event. It was absolutely brilliant.
Right. Mm. Very hospitable. Something the French are always known for. But
there can be issues. You know, Anglo-French relations sometimes could be strained. But they were very, very good with this one. The organisation was absolutely magnificent. But we'll be back again. Got quite a lot lined up. Let's look to the future now. We've learned our lesson. The past always shapes the future. So we're not going to dwell on it, but we'll learn from it. We've got a Six Nations event. We've got the Anglo-Welsh Cup for the ladies to refish again. We've also got a multi-nation cup. We're hoping that it might be six, but it might be five now with the ladies team. As far as the lads are concerned, we'll have a Six Nations next year. We're going to have a Home Nations as well. And this is really, really good news that Scotland, Ireland and Wales have now got their federations all sorted. They had their Anglo Cup. They had their Celtic Cup last year, where Wales, Scotland and Ireland all got together. And this year, for the first year, 2017, we'll be having a Home Nations event. So, you know, plenty of news for the England squads. The ladies have got two full international events, one against Wales and one the Five Nations. The lads will have the World Championships, we'll have the European Championships, Six Nations, we'll have the Home Nations, and we've also got a friendly. So there's going to be four events there. And also the other big news, and I'll give you a bit of a scoop on it. There's been a little bit of news on it so far, but certainly we're going to be pushing forward a youth squad as well. And I've spoken with both France and Holland, and they've got their squads in place as well. So the idea will be for us to put together a youth squad, and we'll move forwards with that for the future, and hopefully have what we class as an exhibition event this year. And the exhibition event will be, we'll get the three nations together. Believe me, it will be competitive. It will be a competitive friendly, so we can iron out the creases with a view to going forwards with a full, fully ratified World International in 2018. So loads and loads of movement on that front. And it's really good across the board for carp fishing generally.
Fantastic. And one of the reasons why we haven't spoke for a while is because of how busy you are now. Obviously you've been away with England, the TV stuff. I've seen you've been catching a few fish for a new series, is it?
Absolutely, yes. On the Bank, that will be out. The first show goes to air on the 12th of December. And effectively what it does, I suppose, is takes over from Tight Lines, where Tight Lines was. So we cover all sorts of disciplines. My co-presenter, Andy Ford, is a fluff chucker. Obviously, I'm a carp angler. So we're constantly ripping the mickey out of each other anyway for obviously the other one fishing the wrong discipline. And then every now and again we meet in the middle, so we might go out and have a bash on the river with the floats, living a few little boyhood dreams of going to different places and sort of the odd challenge as well. So I think we may have touched on it at the very beginning of the year when all of the BT coverage started. But now we're getting towards the magazine series bit. 12 programmes, split into two groups of six. So we'll run the first six from the 12th of January. 12th of December. Then there's a little gap. And then we're back again in the spring with another six. And I've got to say, all the way through the year, we've managed to get quite a lot of fishing telly on. Loads of events covered. The carp events. We've done the World Carp Classic. We've done the British Carp Champs. We've also been out and covered all of the England squads, feeder, float, predator, so on and so forth. So, you know, lots of coverage gone through, and now we settle down into sort of the nitty gritty stuff of magazine program. But hopefully, it will be. It should be quite well received because the idea is fun. You know, we want to bring across that fishing is fun. It's meant for anglers. It's not meant for non-anglers. So it is an angling show. But at the same time, we're hoping to broaden the interest value to try and bring people in. You know, when you sit down and watch a show for the first quarter, hopefully there'll be enough in that first quarter for people that don't fish to think, oh, this is actually quite good. We'll watch a bit of this as well. So, yeah.
Are the viewing figures generally okay for the stuff that has aired already?
Mate, they've been absolutely brilliant. A little bit like, you know how the pop charts, although the kids probably don't know what the pop charts are. Back in olden days, we used to have records that we stuck on player. And there was, on a Sunday, you'd be sat by the radio, normally from 6 till 7, but probably from 6:45 until 7:00 with a microphone and your cassette player, yeah, trying to record. It was the top of the charts. And just in the same way that the music charts exist, there's a TV chart as well. And I'm quite proud to say that we managed to get one of our fishing programs in at top 10 on 1 week. Wow. Which was brilliant. You know, this is British Audience Research Bureau, so it's official figures. And yeah, the UK Angling Championships final round came in at number 10, which, you know, when you think that BT Sport have Champions League, they have MotoGP, they have UFC, they have Premier League football, they have all sorts of other things that we compete against. For us to get anywhere near the top 10 is amazing for a fishing program.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So, you know, we regularly hit top 10 on the daily figures, primarily, and you know, we get quite good figures on it anyway, but we go out on a Monday and there isn't any football on a Monday. And the problem is that, you know, in the real world, as soon as you put fishing up against football, fishing loses, because lots of people go fishing, but more people watch football. So, you know, we're always going to be up against it. But if you look across a week, when you think in the course of a normal week, there will be 2 or 3 Premier League games, there might be a Champions League game, there'll be at least one rugby game, if not two, and there will also be the rugby magazine show that goes on with Dally and all the other boys there. You know, so we're up against some fairly hefty, serious programmes. If it's a MotoGP week as well, you've normally got two lots of MotoGP on, and they're massive pulls. So, yeah, long answer to a short question. How are the figures going? They're going bloody well, to be fair.
Fantastic. And loads of content over Christmas, is it, when we're all stuffing our faces, sat in front of the telly for 2 weeks?
Mate, we've got a Boxing Day show, 7 o'clock on Boxing Day. How cool is that?
Wow.
Now, to get a slot on Boxing Day is, well, you know, you just don't get them. Well, obviously some people get them, but fishing doesn't normally get it. So to have a slot on Boxing Day, particularly 7 o'clock in the evening, you know, that they've, what BT have said is they're committed to fishing. They're committed to running this 7 o'clock Monday night slot. And whenever Monday falls, if it's 7 o'clock on a Monday, that's our slot. We'll crack on with it. So turns out the Boxing Day this year, and they're like, blimey, you know, that is an absolute prime time slot. Of prime time slots, that's not far off about as prime time as you can, because Boxing Day is actually a better viewing day than Christmas Day.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, that's a corker. So, yeah, 7 o'clock, we've got a bit of a special on there. I'll tease it for you by saying that we've got a little bit of carp on it. But also what we do is, because it's a little bit multidiscipline, Fordy is a fly angler, and he's in the England squad. I like chucking a stick float round now and again, so we decided to meet on a river and have a float v fly event.
Okay.
So to see which is the best, we were fishing for grayling, because obviously grayling are as carpy as they come. So we decided that we were going to have a grayling float event on a river, but there are a number of rules and twists in it, and it's just very, very funny. Very, very funny. So, yeah, that's one to look out to there as well.
7 p.m. Boxing Day. I'm sure, yeah, we'll all be sat in feeling the effects of a few drinks and exactly, mince pies and stuff. So, yeah,
nice. Needing a fishing fix, mate. It's got to be done. But don't forget, every Monday, 7 o'clock, BT Sport 2. The first one goes out on the 12th. And the main story in that is I go overseas in search of a monster.
Yeah.
And a monster, realistically, you know, it's a realistic monster. And you know, a 40-pound fish is a big fish, but we have to have a bit of a target. And the target I set myself is going away to try and catch a 50-pounder.
Wow.
Now, a 50-pounder is a big fish. You know, in anybody's money, a 50-pounder is a big fish. Whether you go to France or not, it's a big fish. Loads of lads will be listening to this thinking, yeah, I've been over to France and caught a 50. Remember how you felt? I still get that feeling. Loads of lads will have gone over to France and not yet caught a 50. You know how tricky it can be to catch one. So I've set myself a pretty tough target. I've got 48 hours actual fishing time, and I've got to try and catch a 50-pounder. So tune into that one on the 12th.
Fantastic. What else has gone on in the news since we last spoke? Well, one, particularly large bit of news was a 70-pound carp caught from your original neck of the woods, out from one of Rob Hales' waters. Have you got much opinion on this?
Well, being a shy, retiring, quiet type, I haven't obviously got an opinion on anything at all. Also, having been so busy recently, I've got to say that since the World Champs, and also possibly a little bit before it, my head hasn't been in the news. But no, I saw that that Big Rig, as it's called, has been caught at, was it 68 first, and then it's been caught since at 70-something.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, without any shadow of doubt, that's a massive carp. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't know. I've heard various different stories about where it's come from, how long it's been around, what it's been fed, etc., etc., etc. And everybody comes at this from a different angle. You know, should it be the record? As far as I'm aware, I don't know if the bloke's actually submitted a record request for it yet. So if he hasn't submitted one, then presumably it isn't the record. It might be the biggest fish caught in the country, but if he hasn't submitted a record application, then it's not going to be the British record. So anybody talking about it as to its merits for a British record is irrelevant if an application hasn't been submitted. So the record at the moment, I think, is Dean Fletcher's got the record, has he?
Yep.
Has that actually been ratified yet? I can't remember.
I think it has, yeah.
Yeah, so Dean Fletcher's got the record with the parrot from weighing at 68 pounds and whatever it was. And a fish bigger than that has been caught. Now, the first thing I would say with regards to the British record is the British record is exactly that. It is a record. And a record is a factual record of what's being caught. I don't think that for the British record list, and this is where I'm going to get controversial now, but I'm putting my lawyer's head on. I think that if that fish has been caught in England and it's over the weight of the previous record, it's a record. You can't look at the merits of it. You can't look at the subjective view as to whether you think it's a right or a wrong un, because that's just irrelevant. The record is exactly what it says it should be, a record of what's been caught. So the British Record Fish Committee, in my mind, are actuaries. And what an actuary is effectively like an accountant, somebody that just keeps a record of numbers. And the record of numbers is that if a fish has been caught at £40 and another one has been caught at 42, then the 42 is bigger, therefore it's a record. What does it have to do? Does it have to be caught in the UK? Yes, it has been. Does it have to be caught on rod and line? Yes, it does. So if it's caught on rod and line in the UK, it's a record. Simple as that. Surely.
I don't know anything about this. The British Record Fish Committee, are they a subsidiary of the Angling Trust, or what's the legal body behind it?
No, they're a separate group. I can't remember exactly what their origins are, but at some stage, they're effectively a self-appointed committee that have become the recognised authority.
Yeah.
Which is how the majority of things happen. So, you know, somebody somewhere has to turn around and say, right, you know, I think somebody needs to make a judgment on this. So my view is that if anybody is a self-appointed committee, their credibility rests in the people that believe what they say. Now, if you don't believe what the committee is saying, or you don't accept what the committee is saying, then they have no credibility. If they have no credibility, they have no place. Yeah. So let's, and it sounds like I'm actually criticising the British Record Fish Committee at the moment. I'm absolutely not. We're establishing exactly who they are and what they're doing. So the BRFC are there, be they appointed or be they self-appointed, but they have become the recognised authority on records. And what they decided to do at some stage in the distant past, and this is an evolutionary process, is if somebody wants to claim a record for a species, certain criteria have to be met. So, for example, we have to check the scales. Because, you know, I could catch it at £76 and find that my scales are £10 out.
Yeah.
When actually it was 66, so it's well below everything. So they said, right, what you have to do then is if someone wants to claim a record, really, we need to check that it was weighed properly.
Yeah.
So that would be rule one, has it been weighed properly? Well, yeah, it should have been. What they then said is, well, really, we need to check the scales. So scales have to go to weights and measures, and they have to be tested. And there has to be a certificate to say that they are plus or minus whatever percentage that it's correct. So when you submit an application, you have to provide a number of things. Firstly, you have to provide a confirmation that your scales are correct. because that's an easy one. Secondly, you know, the scales might be correct, but you might not have read the Avon right. And when it whizzed round four times, you might have counted it going round six times. And what seems to be the biggest fish in the world to you might actually be a 20-pounder because you've never seen one bigger than 10. And because you didn't count it right, or on some scales there's double digits on them, isn't there? So it might be 60, but actually it's 30.
Yeah.
Because it's a double revolution dial. So, you know, there's all sorts of things there. So they then brought in a regulation saying that that to be witnessed. Because quite frankly, you or I could turn around and go, just call myself a 90-pounder, Jay.
Yeah.
Let's Photoshop a picture of someone else's fish on the front of us, clearly with their fingers on, and just stick our head over the top of it, as I've seen some bloody idiot do recently somewhere. Did you see that one? There was a well-known capture of somebody with a fish, and some other chap, he's decided to Photoshop his head on it and say that he caught it. What planet are people on? But anyway, look, he makes a fool of himself. Everyone laughs at him. He needs to think about his future. You know, you need to have a witness that it's caught. It needs to be corroborated. It needs to be weighed properly, and the scales need to be checked. So those are the basic facts. Now, the fact that, and I'll use the old Lancashire record, the fact that a big fish was wheeled into the county and stuck into a pond that's got a liner on it, caught the following day by the bloke, and you know, it's Lancashire's first 40 or whatever. Everybody knew that it had absolutely no credibility.
Yeah.
However, factually, it was the first 40-pounder caught from Lancashire. Now, is it a record? Let's justify what a record is. If you're saying a record is something aspirational that people should beat, then that's when you step into the world of credibility. If you're saying a record is the literal definition of it, it's a record, then actually the fact that it was caught means that that was enough. And in law now, this is where we'll put the legal heads on. In law, there's a number of things that you look at with a criminal offence. So, for example, for there to be a theft of something, theft, get ready for the boring definition, theft according to Section 1 of the Theft Act 1968 is the dishonest appropriation of property belonging to another with the intention of permanently depriving the other of it. So that's the full definition of what theft is.
Yeah.
Because to you, or to me normally, theft might be taking something that doesn't belong to us.
Yeah.
So if you pick it up and take it away, and it was mine, I turn around and say, you've nicked that. You turn around and say, didn't intend to nick it, mate. I was going to bring it back. Here, have it back. So if there was no intention on you to permanently deprive me of it, and you have actually given it me back, then it isn't theft. So if in court you turned around and said, look, he's a mate of mine. I really genuinely didn't think that he would mind me borrowing it. It was a borrow and I've given it him back anyway. That is not theft. So that is something called a mens rea. That's the Latin dictum, as they call it, the mens rea. And what mens rea means is the mental state. So it's the thought process of the bloke that's doing it. So that's theft, the thought process behind it. Let's now have a look at what we call a strict liability offence. And a strict liability offence is, did it happen? Yes, he's guilty then. And the easiest example of a strict liability offence I can give you is a speeding offence.
Right.
Because the speed limit is 30 mile an hour. Are you doing over 30 mile an hour? Yes, you're guilty. Yeah. Simple as. There's no, well, I think he was, or I think he wasn't, or I didn't mean to, or alternatively, I was only doing it because. It doesn't make any difference at all. The speeding offence is a strict liability offence. It doesn't matter what the reasoning behind it is. You're speeding. Now, if you were speeding because your missus is just about to have a baby and you've got to get her to hospital, that's something called a mitigating factor. And you can go to court saying, yes, I plead guilty to the fact that I was speeding. However, the reason behind it was this.
Right, and they'll so take you into still consideration. Plead guilty.
Yeah. So, well, you would have to plead guilty because you can't be doing 37 mile an hour in a 30 and plead not guilty.
Yeah.
What you do is you say, yes, I'm guilty of it, but the reason I was doing it is this.
Yeah. So you're saying the fact that this fish was caught, the second capture was £71 or £70, it happened, it's a fact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So do the BRFC take in a mitigating circumstances to claims?
this is the grey area, and this is where I'm hoping that the BRFC will be sensible, because the BRFC in the past did something which I think was a great shame, and actually they'll probably need to reverse their previous judgment on it. And their previous judgment was in relation to catfish records. And Wells Catfish used to have a record in the UK, and there was if you caught a big Wells catfish, just like any other species, you could apply for a record. But then what happened is some big let fish started to be imported from overseas.
Yeah.
And then the catfish record became a bit of a joke. And amongst catfish anglers, it was a bit of a joke. And the British Record Fish Committee turned around and went, you know what, we're fed up of all of this. We're going to abolish the British record in relation to catfish.
Yeah.
Because we can't justify exactly whether or not the fish should be the record. Now, there is a risk at the moment, and I don't know whether it's gossip that I've heard, or I don't know whether I've picked up on something, or I might just be plucking something out of the sky. But there is a risk now that with Big Rig as a prime example, if that fish is accepted as an import, irrespective of what weight it was, let's not get into the weight, because we don't know exactly what weight it was imported. But I think I don't know
all this, but I'll let you carry on. Hales on the show, so we know the exact facts from the people that sold it him, and everything. I'll tell you all that in a minute. But yeah, carry on.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me pick some figures, just because I think I know where it's come from, and I think I knew a few bits and bobs, but I'm saying this without corroboration of it. So
yeah.
But let's say that, you know, Mike at Fenland has sold Rob the fish. It was an Israeli fish that was imported in at whatever weight it was imported in. It was bought in small. Mike's grown it on as part of his business. Mike has then sold it to Rob. Rob's seen the growth rate of these fish and thought, blimey, you know, if I do something special with this, I might be able to get it up quick. He's put it in a pond. He's fed it some fish. And let's pick some figures. It came in at 20. Rob bought it at 40. He's grown it to 70, stocked it in the pond.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's done that, then we've got a little bit of the history of the fish. The big issue for me is the fact that it was stocked into the pond over the record. That's the big issue. Yeah. So if you were going to get subjective about things, and here's me getting subjective about something, given my opinion that I shouldn't be giving, because I've just said that the British Record Fish Committee should be objective about things. If I want to get subjective, I would say, well, in my mind, I think the fish has to have grown in its natural environment to beat the record. And we had a conversation yesterday. There was a few people discussing this yesterday, actually, and they said, well, you know, you've got to have proof that it's been around for a while. Well, you can't possibly say that. Let's take chard as a prime example.
Yeah.
The fantastic pike fishery down the road in Bristol, near me down here now. You're not allowed to carp fish it. But believe me, if there's carp in there, I reckon they'll be decent.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of place that hasn't really been carp fished that would be absolutely perfect for it. And if there were carp in there, there could be a big one. So say, for example, Southwest Water now say, Hughesy, you seem a decent bloke. Come down here, have a crack on this place. We reckon there might be a carp in it. And I bang a 75-pounder out on a choddy on my first sling.
Yeah.
Bang. Look at that. I've just caught an unknown 75-pounder from the UK that nobody's ever heard of, from a lake that's never been fished. That's the gem, isn't it? That's what everybody would dream of, catching an unknown British record fish from a water that's a true blue water that's never had a stocking of it that people know about.
Well, but then suddenly,
it's got no history. So because it's got no history, everyone's going to turn around and go, well, you can't claim that.
Yeah.
Why not? Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean to say it wasn't right. Alternatively, I could have smuggled it in and it's just gone out the back of my van. I might not have even chucked a rod in the water. I'll just pose for a photograph by the side of a lake with it straight out the back of the van, having come back from some Eastern European climb. And, you know, look at me with this. You can see the photograph of me putting it back in there. This is where it was from. No, that's where it's going. So, you know, anything without history is always difficult, which is why, as soon as you bring in a subjective opinion, that's when you've got problems. And the BRFC, I think, have to act on the basis of fact, not opinion. And the reason I'm so vehemently strong about this is that if the BRFC decide to abolish the record for carp in the same way that they did for catfish, that is an absolute travesty, A, to carp fishing, B, it almost disrespects all the previous record holders over the years. And you look at all those iconic record holders. Look at Walker.
Yeah.
Look at Yates. You know, look at when Roddy Porter and Alex White caught those fish. And, you know, there was controversy around those, but actually nobody's bothered now as the clock's gone forwards. You know, and that was hilarious because at the time, as much as people have got bees in their bonnets about this one, when Alex caught that fish first, Yatesy was bouncing up and down going, it can't possibly count, it's spawn bound and it's in the old close season. So anything that was in the old close season didn't count. So lo and behold, the clock ticked a week by, the season came, and Roddy Porter caught it.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. I can't remember whether it was Roddy Porter or Alex White that caught it first. But, you know, one caught it in the close season, the other one caught it in the, in the close season, in the old close season. And then one caught it in the old proper season. A week later, a little bit heavier. I think there was 2 ounces difference. Massive amount of controversy. And it was almost, everybody was bouncing up and down with joy when Terry caught Mary. Well, Dave Cumston, I think, caught Mary to break the record first, didn't he? And when he did it, it was fantastic because it was proper again.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when you look back at history, it's just fact that we're interested in. Because all of this stuff about whether it's a right nor a wrong un or anything like that doesn't make any difference. It's people getting bees in the bonnets and being a bit silly. And let me be really, really, really controversial now. And believe me, with this British record carp, I think that we have to have a British record carp because it gives something for people to aspire to. And also it adds credibility to carp fishing generally. And I think if we lose that record, if it goes the same way that the catfish record went, it will be an absolute travesty for carp fishing. And I think the BRFC are making a big mistake with it. But anyway, let's have a look at the alternative. And I'm absolutely not going to knock anybody's captures with anything at all. And I don't stand in the keep it real camp, and I don't stand in the wrong end camp. I stand right in the middle with a straight mind on this. But forgive me, I see quite a few pictures of the parrot. Now, if you're looking for a utopian ideal, what you want is a fish that hardly ever comes out. That's really difficult.
Yeah.
That actually, when it's been caught as a record, isn't going to get caught as a record again. Because if the record that's caught now is the same record as the one that's going to be caught next time and was the one that was caught before, but there's 2 ounces difference between it, then all you've got is a Mary situation and then a two-tone situation. And yes, you know, great, but that fish will then become the subject of carpet bagging, effectively, where people want to go in and target that fish purely because it's a British record, not necessarily because it's the merit of the capture. And if we're going to put merit of the capture, I've seen a lot of pictures of the parrot this year. So how many times have they come out this year? 11? And it's, I believe there's...
It's a friendly one. You know,
it's a friendly one, exactly. What's friendly another word for, Jamie?
Mog.
Exactly. Now, I'm not for 1 minute saying that fish, before anybody with a beard or anything like that jumps up and down and says, Hughes, you're being a knob. I'm not for 1 minute saying that. What I'm looking at is fact. And you've got a fish in a syndicate that comes out quite a lot that has been the British record and is going up again, and it will carry on going, and whoever catches it next will be the British record. What means that you can say that has got more credibility than the other one?
Well, now, it's a friendly fish in a lake that's dead man's shoes to get on, so I can never fish for it. And I believe it was caught with a bait boat as well. So, I mean, how purist do you want to be?
Exactly, and that is absolutely exactly my opinion, that you can't put a judgment on them. As soon as you start putting subjective opinions on stuff, then, you know, it makes a mockery of it. It has to be fact.
Yeah.
Which is why, if you don't like the fact that the British record should be the Rob Hill 70-pounder, then you do like the fact that it should be the parrot, because I saw there was a little survey put about which one should it be, this one or that one. I think the argument's completely wrong and it's misguided. It has to be a factual basis.
Lots of people don't know facts about lots of different things. You know, there's so much, I'm sure you know, because I know of a fair few things behind the scenes, that things are not as they seem. And if people actually knew the truth about certain situations, captures, you know, all sorts of politics, they might have a very different view than what they have. So
That's it. The credibility is always in the individual eye of the beholder. It's not like we're on the same running track or running the same 100-metre race against exactly the same time.
No.
Or the same clock. We don't do that in fishing. We do different things. And this is why, again, I come back to it again, it's got to be factual. It can't be subjective. And that's my absolute opinion. So if you're asking me, let's go right round to the beginning of this. What do you think of Big Rig? Should it be accepted as a British record? Yes.
Yeah.
Do I think it's a credible record? Sorry, Rob. No, I don't. And the reason I don't think it's a credible record is because it was effectively not artificially grown. That's the wrong way to say it. But it was put into a lake at above the British record. But the British record for me is all about fact, not opinion.
I mean, just because it was put in that lake, it lived in a lake next door on the same complex and grew to that size. Now, it doubled its body weight since Rob Hales had it. So it's a flyer. Now, as you said before, I mean, if you found a 69 pounder, you know, let's say a fish that's bigger than the record, if you found it in a lake that got drained down, let's say one of the big Colne Valley pits that's never allowed fishing on, it's a boating lake, right? It got drained down because it was getting houses built on it, right? You saw this 69.5 pound fish waddling in the mud and you slung it in the Coeur d'Alene lake next door, you know, the what's it like, because it was the nearest bit of water to put it in. It gets caught 2 days later at 70 pound and 1 ounce, right? Should that be the record? Well, it's grown its whole life in a UK bit of water, but it was moved into a lake and caught straight away. Is it a record or not? I mean, it is. So that ain't a lot different to Big Rig.
Well, that ain't a lot different to Horton, to be fair.
No, Horton.
And it, you know, and if there's going to be some true bluers out there as well, look at Horton. Those fish, when they moved into there from the Road Lake originally, when the Parrot was round and Jack and all of the old original ones, and this is something that some of the younger listeners might not know about, but Horton was the holy grail for a number of carpetbaggers from sort of 10, 15 years ago. But all of those fish were originally in a pond down the road called the Road Lake.
Yeah.
And they were taken out of there, and because that was going to either be sold, or originally the thought was it was going to be filled in. And the fish were taken out of there and put into Horton, which was originally a trout lake. And the waiting list to get on there in that first year, or the applications from superstars to get on there, was amazing. Partly because they had the opportunity to be able to fish for those fish. But secondly, those fish didn't know what day of the week it was or where it was. And as a result, they were coming out left, right and centre. And I do have a little chortle to myself about people that beat the chests and go, look how awesome I am, I've caught this, that and the other. And yet, if you scratch a little bit further below it, it might be a time bandit, it might be somebody that got on there in the first year when the fish were confused, it might be all sorts of reasons. And this is why the credibility issue is so flawed across the board. And you know, I stand by this all the time. Credibility on any individual fish capture is absolutely purely in the eye of the person that's caught it.
Yep.
I know what fish I've caught. I know which fish I've worked for, and I know which fish I've caught luckily. I know which fish count for me, and I know which fish don't really count for me. And that might sound a really strange thing, but I will go and fish for fish that effectively don't really count. Because actually, I quite enjoy fishing, and I quite like going out and catching a few big ones now and again.
Holiday
now,
fish, I've exactly, said the same.
Exactly that. You know, where does it end up on your list? Might not even be on the list.
That's just, still might have had a great week, though. You know?
Exactly, mate. Exactly. And this, I think, is where people need to either turn their ego down a little bit, or alternatively, open their mind and their eyes a little bit. You know, and you and me have known each other for quite a long time now. I think we've got a reasonable amount of respect for each other, and I don't mean this detrimentally in any way, shape, or form. But anything that you catch doesn't have any effect on me.
Yeah.
I like seeing you catch stuff, and I love the way you fish, and I've mentioned it to you before. Your slideshow from what you did up in the Northwest blew me away. That was brilliant, because I was from up there and I didn't realise you'd caught as many as you had. I know you'd had a few, but bloody hell, that was amazing. And you know, that is inspirational stuff when you see that, because when you see the story and you see the backroom story to it and all the other bits and bobs, that's inspirational stuff, and that's great. But the majority of the time, fish that anyone else catches, unless they're really, really close mates to you, or alternatively, unless you're fishing the same water as me and you catch the fish that I want to catch, actually, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't mean anything,
so,
no.
So Joe Soap, who I can't stand, goes fishing tomorrow and has 10 50s from a lake in England. So?
Yeah.
Why should I be jealous of him?
Well, anybody with an open and sound logical mind isn't. That's the thing. There's nobody I know that gets affected or upset about these issues. But frankly 80% of social media does. And you know, my opinion is formed on other people's reactions to things. You know, I know you haven't had a chance to catch up on the Carpcast recently, but we've discussed this a bit, and you know, there's nobody of sane mind whose opinion I respect that has come up with anything different than the conversation we're having now. You know, fishing's personal. Yeah. There's no right or wrong. There's facts, non-facts, and even if the True Bluers knew the truth behind a lot of things that, you know, are common knowledge to people in the industry, then they, you know, it ridicules an opinion they've based on rubbish anyway.
Any opinion that's based on flawed fact is a flawed opinion.
Exactly.
So you know,
but some people don't want to hear facts sometimes. You know, Rob Hales, I mean, I do recommend you go back and listen to his interview. You know, the guy talked a lot of sense. He was not ashamed in any way whatsoever. Can't understand what all the fuss is about. He's just a fish farmer who's done a particularly good job of picking flyers every now and again. You know,
well, that's it. What's Rob's job? And it's exactly right. He's bloody good at it.
Yeah,
isn't he? And actually, you know, there's somebody that I don't know whether I'll go there. Shall I go there? He'll probably get the ump.
Go on.
No, I'm not going to. I know you like a bit of controversy. I'm not gonna name anyone, but there's one bloke that criticises Rob quite a bit for reasons, and he criticises quite a few other people, and yet he's fishing lakes with those fish in.
Yeah.
Now, I just don't get it. I genuinely don't get it. What, you know, if you have got to be, or if you have genuinely got that critical mind, but you still want to fish the waters, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
so you know, you don't need to go out and sort of blast people for something for the sake of blasting people for something, because ultimately what ends up is you end up being a hypocrite. And you're seen as a hypocrite, and as soon as you're seen as a hypocrite, you lose your credibility. And to me, this is one of the biggest things that we have. And you know, genuinely for me, in the carp fishing world, there's lads that are much, much better anglers than me. There's lads that are worse anglers than me. Doesn't make any difference as far as I'm concerned. I like spending time with people that I like, and I think that if you're a name in this industry, you're a bit of a role model, and if you're a bit of a role model, the model that you should set is one of honesty and integrity. And as soon as you get hypocrisy into it, I think that becomes quite difficult. To a degree, we can all be a little bit hypocritical, and everybody's got an ego. I would be lying if I said I haven't got an ego. Everybody has an ego, and if you turn around and go, I ain't got an ego at all, you've got an ego by saying you haven't got an ego. Having the ego isn't the problem, it's managing it and making sure the ego isn't too big. That's what the problem is. And if you're wondering about that, let's take that onto basic terms. What is an ego? An ego is where you get personal satisfaction from something. So if I turn around and went, Jamie, you've done a really bloody good show, you and Mark with the Carpcast, well done, boys, and you go, thanks very much for the praise, I've just boosted your ego.
Yeah.
Nothing at all wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it's when that ego goes up to DEFCON 9 and they, you know, and they have to start... start whatever they start, and I'm not going to go down there as well. We do go on some interesting tangents, don't we? Can I say yesterday when we had a brief chat yesterday, because you rang me for this call then, and I couldn't speak to you because I've got a film crew waiting. We were going out to do some filming. I was down at a fish farm yesterday, and we were filming a netting. And this is on a completely different tangent now, but it's something that that a number of your contributors have talked about in the past, and that's predatory carp.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put something across my Facebook page. I'll see if I can do it later today that will absolutely blow your mind. But actually, when do you go out? You can have the scoop on this. When will this go out?
This is going to go out today.
All right. Okay. Well, I will do it tonight then. So your listeners will be the first people that can see this. What time are you doing it? And I'll time my thing to go out when yours goes out.
I'm going to edit it. I've been waiting for this interview to get it out. Mark and I have done our bit, so it will be out within probably 3 hours of finishing this call.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I'll stick that up later as well then. I've got a photograph of something that absolutely blew my mind. We're netting this stock pond, and the Tony Campbell's got some fish in there, and he's got a reasonable mix. It's primarily carp. Anyway, In the bottom of the net, there was a small rudd and a gudgeon, both of them with the heads crushed. But the body was there. So, and the head had been crushed just behind the gill plate. And I've looked at it and thought, oh, poor things, they got damaged in the net, so they've been trodden on. He went, no, it's the carp that are eating them.
Mm.
And I'm like, what, really? And, you know, I know we've touched on predatory carp, but this, and yes, I fully accept that it happens, and everybody sort of accepts now that this is correct. But these fish are absolutely amazing. He said, oh, he sees them doing it all the time. Mm. And a lot of the time when they're netted, they'll regurgitate out. You know, sometimes when you catch a chub and it'll spit all the maggots back out again, and they're terrible for being sick. The carp do sort of similar things as well. But what they do is, particularly when they're in close proximity, they suck the fish in, they take the head in first, they crush the head with the pharyngeal teeth, and then they effectively suck all of the juice and the nutrients out of the fish.
Yeah.
And to actually get some of these fish to see what they've done and see how they've done it was amazing. And I said, you know, is it genuinely correct that this is what they're doing? They, you know, it's not just a case that they might have eaten these. He said, well, no, sometimes they'll eat the whole fish, but a lot of the time they suck the head, they eat the head, they'll suck the rest of whatever they can out of it, and then they'll effectively spit a skin out.
Wow.
Now, I said, have you seen this? And he says, yeah, come and have a look at the fry tanks. So we went inside the building, and it's why, and any fish farmer will tell you this, and sometimes, you know, it's obvious when you think about it, but it's why they have to grade so much. Because as soon as you get a fish that's slightly bigger than the other fish, they start eating the others. And he said they become predatory from as soon as they're off the yolk sac.
Wow.
And this is carp. Not, you know, it's not predators, this is carp. They're predatory as soon as they're off the yolk sac. And he took me to a number of different tanks, and he was showing me, we were looking at these fish that would be anything between a centimetre and up to 3 inches long. And at any one stage in the tank, he would see a number of fish that would have another fish hanging out the back of their mouth. You know, like when a perch takes a lure really deep.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind, because it's the first time that I've actually seen how they do it and seen them doing it. And I watched one eat two fish. And you know, it's amazing. It's down to the size difference. So,
wow.
Yeah, there we go. But I'll put these photographs of these this gudgeon and this roach up, so you can see exactly what they're like. It's amazing.
Wow, live baiting for carp.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we know Holmes has already been mentioned in this episode for the argument he's had with Nashi over the last week. You know, we've had a few opinions on that, but you know, his previous argument with Daryl that we covered was all about this exact subject.
And yes,
Holmes, yeah, you know, he'd been proved right many times, and we doff our cap. You certainly were ahead of the game on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to me, it was really, really interesting seeing it. Just, you know, it's absolutely conclusive. Absolutely conclusive.
Wow. So, like I say, fish farmers, they know this. And then, as we've said, going back to Rob Hales, you know, he's pretty good at his job. He was telling us how he's grown 50-pounders from spawn. You know, you complete UK fish. He's grown fish to over 50 in his lakes from about as true blue as you get, you know, same as any other true blue English fish. Its fathers were probably foreign import, and then they've been grown, bred in this country and grown, and he's grown them in 10 years to 50 pound. And you know, it's no different. He was saying he's got spawn and small fish already off this big rig that he's collected over the last few years. He's had it four or five years. He's had big rig, which has grown from, I think it was imported at 29. It was 26 or 29, I can't remember now, without listening back. He bought it at 39, but he bought two mid-30s at the same time. He always buys the flyers, the bigger ones, pays a lot of money for him, and, you know, it's grown it to, it just grew better than all the others. The other two had put, I think they'd put £5 on in the same amount of time, and this one had doubled its body weight. Just happened to be a good fish. He's took spawn off that. Can you imagine what the genes in those fish are going to be like, which will be as English as they get?
Absolutely. They're amazing. That strain of fish are absolutely amazing. You're going to get a look at Captain Jack and see see what that's done. And I know that was the only 40 that was put into Holm Fen, and it's £64 now in 2 years.
Yeah,
so you know, that's an amazing amount of weight, isn't it?
Most of the home fen fish, as much as the purists don't like to hear it, most of the home fen fish were doubles, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, I've had the privilege of being able to see the stocking records of home fen in particular. And not only that, but, you know, the fish are all chipped. So they recorded, and it's recorded properly. There's no mileage for anybody to turn around and say, oh, it's bigger than it was or it's smaller than it was. He keeps a factual record because, again, you know, Mike in particular at Fenland, he's a fish farmer.
Yeah.
He wants to know what his stock are doing, and there's no point him deceiving himself on growth rates either up or down, because that doesn't help him with the way that he's going to grow his fish on in the future. And, you know, take out the fact that they're imports, take out the fact anything at all other than the fact that he's a fish farmer, he needs to work on facts, because his facts will help him with his feed ratios, with his stock ratios, and it will make him more profitable in the future with the way that he manages his farm, if he knows exactly what they're doing. And, you know, I've seen records there where I saw one fish that had put 27 pounds on in 2 years.
Yeah.
Just, you know, absolutely incredible. And the other thing, take this as an absolute given, I think those fish are absolutely stunning. You know, when you look at the colour on them, you look at the scale patterns on them, what they bring to the table is immense. And if you think they're easy fish, they're not credible, you know what, absolutely fine. Not a problem at all. Keep thinking it. If you think they're the best fish in the world and there's more credibility in going out and catching Captain Jack at £68 than there is going out catching anything else at all, absolutely fine. Crack on, keep doing it. Doesn't have any effect at all.
What's your opinion? I mean, the Israeli fish have been associated with KHV. We've got a big KHV breakout in the UK at the minute. We know, in particular, the Fenland fish, they don't like being mixed with other fish. Lots of lakes have lost existing stocks when they've stocked, you know, legally stocked Fenland fish into the lakes. They've killed the existing stock. That's happened on a number of occasions that I know of. You've got to be careful. You know, even Rob Hales was saying that he quarantines any fish that he buys for over a year before he'll mix it with any other fish.
Absolutely. This is where you get to the crux of anything, in that people want instant fisheries and they want ease, and they want, you know, the argument for people turning around saying, well, they don't count because they're too big and therefore there's no credibility in them, it goes a lot deeper than that. And this is where we do get on the slightly more serious side of things, because, you know, initially we were talking about credibility of fish size.
Yeah.
If you're now talking about KHV, this is something that I'm up to my neck in at the moment, because I'm looking at, I was hopefully yesterday going to be going down to see CFAS.
Yeah.
In Weymouth to do an interview with them for the TV series about KHV, because it's one of the big pushes we're having at the moment through the Angling Trust work we're doing. And I was talking to Mark Owen, who's the head of freshwater at Angling Trust, about this. So while we're on, if we can address that, this is absolutely brilliant, because it's an area that's coming under our remit now. There's been, in my mind, a definite jump this year, because KHV previously was very much associated with match fisheries.
Yeah.
And match fisheries were associated with F1s. F1s were associated with Israel and the inoculations that they were given to try and stop them developing SVC or whatever other disease it was historically. So the fact that the carriers of KHV, they were supposed to be inoculated, but they're actually carriers of this, and it's coming to the country. What we've seen in previous years is quite a nasty spread across match fisheries, but it's never really jumped the gap into carp fisheries until this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll use Thorpley as a prime example. There's one. I think Hunt Street is another one. I'm sure there are others. Did Willersley have it? Forgive me if we probably better check the exact facts.
There's a few. There's a list.
May or may not.
There's a list on the EA website. They're releasing it.
Just to clarify that, any mention of any venues that I've had there may or may not be, and you want to check facts on the CFAS website first. But there has been definitely, at least to my knowledge, 4 out-and-out carp fisheries this year that have had KHV, where previously we've seen it. And you know, I've been a little bit ignorant with it, and I've thought, oh, it's a match fishing disease. It's not going to affect us. And it's jumped. And speaking to the scientists that I've spoken to so far about it, and the fish farmers and the breeders and the people that have investigated these things, it's down a lot of the time to fishery management, and more to the point, disease spread management. And there is no doubt whatsoever that the clean, check, dry campaign is the way to go forwards. And that means that whenever you go from one place to another, please, please, please ensure that everything is dry.
Yeah.
Because if it isn't, there's a chance that a waterborne disease can travel over. Now, going a little bit deeper, what is the cause of it? And the answer is a little bit unknown at the moment. Nobody really knows what it is. They don't know whether it's viral, bacterial. KHV indicates that it's a virus, but is it bacteria that transfers it? So there's quite a lot of research that's going on at the moment into trying to find out exactly what is causing that that spread. And it seems to be a little bit of a ticking time bomb, because let's take a scenario where you've been to a match fishery today that's had KHV in the past. It's seemingly clear now, but those fish are carriers on it, because the ones that don't die become immune to it. But they're still carriers of it. So you then come to my fishery that hasn't had it. My fish get it, but it doesn't kill them straight away.
Yeah.
Doesn't touch them at all. They will just sit there because they're absolutely fine. They're not stressed. It's quite a nice environment. My pond's not got too many fish in it. Everyone's happy. So as a result, their immune systems are pretty good, and they don't suffer. But then what happens in the future is I decide, or my members turn around and go, cool, you know, we could do with getting a few more bites, or we could do with this, that, and the other. And I think, oh, I'll go and buy some fish, and I'll put them in. Now, it isn't necessarily the fish that come in that cause the problem. Mm. And this is, you know, and I'm not defending anybody in any way, shape or form. But if there is an underlying something somewhere, then that can cause a problem to both types of fish. Because I've known of fish that have been stocked into a pond that have all died, and the old originals have been fine. But equally, I've heard of fish being stocked into a pond and all the old originals have died, and the new ones have been fine.
Yeah.
And then there's others where fish have been stocked in and they've all gone. And there's others where fish have been stocked in and none of them have gone.
Yeah.
And ultimately what it comes down to is good fishery management practice. And that good fishery management practice, first of all, starts with your water quality. And if your water quality is good, then your fish have got a much, much better chance of surviving any ailments that they have. Because, you know, you're a fit and healthy bloke. You could do with running a bit more, mate, to be fair. But you're a fit and healthy bloke. You get a cold and you'll be fine. You know, you can fight it off. You feel a bit groggy for a while. But if you're run down, you know, when you've been working too hard and everything's all a little bit much and you're starting to get mouth ulcers and everything, you pick that cold up and you can't shift it for weeks. It's because you've got an underlying aura around you almost of unhealthiness, in that because you're not healthy in the first place, you can't fight off those little things. Yeah. And to me, I think there's an awful lot there. And sometimes we look for either an A or a B answer. And it isn't necessarily an A or a B answer. You know, it isn't the fact that, oh, those new fish that have come in are all diseased, they've caused the problem. They might have done. But equally, it might be something that's underlying. And the fact that the new fish have been stocked in has caused your old fish to be stressed, which has lowered their immune system, which has then caused them to suffer a problem.
That's exactly. I'll just clarify that, you know, I mentioned Fenland. I know that they obviously legally stock carp that is section 38, is it, health checked? 30. You know, they're perfectly fine. It's this KHV that seems to be associated with the Israeli fish. We don't know enough about it. And you may not have listened to Kevin Nash's last podcast, but he's actually got he's met somebody, a doctor from the University of East Anglia, who's currently researching KHV. He needs to raise some money, and Kevin's trying to raise him 20 grand so that they can look into this DNA molecular work to identify genes in the UK stocks that result in KHV resistance, so we can actually breed some sort of antidote. Or he's basically trying to raise 20 grand. He's put a load of Nash stuff up for auctions, you know, fishing on the lakes, and just as a fishery owner, he's concerned. Brilliant. That there is a spread of it. There seems to be more this year, as you've just highlighted, and you know, he's took it upon himself to try and you know, this doctor's approached him from the university, and he's basically trying to raise some money for them to do some work. One of his main concerns is, you may have read, the Australian government, the Australians hate carp, don't they, and invasive species, and they actually were planned to introduce KHV into the river systems to kill them off. Now, there are other European countries where carp are invasive species, and can you imagine what would happen even to our English stocks if they injected KHV into European mainland? It ain't long before, you know, some of those fish make their way to the UK, either legally or illegally. As it's on mainland Europe and it's common, you know, it affects us. So we need to be doing this work now to be able to develop, you know, antidotes, cures, you know, a super strong strain that are resistant to it, whatever it is.
Well, I think there's to go back to common sense and basics, there are two ways, and they always say prevention is better than a cure. And if you look at the research that's been done there, that's brilliant because that will hopefully find a cure for it. But if we can prevent it, and we can prevent it being established in the first instance, there's much better chance of it being eradicated. And you know, you can use that analogy for anything at all. You can use that for cormorants, for otters, for signal crayfish, for other predators like that. If they hadn't got a hold, they would be much easier to control.
Hmm.
So at the moment, we're in a brilliant situation now, and it's not a very nice situation to be in, but it's a brilliant position that we can actually do something about it before it's too late. And that thing to do before it's too late is just be very, very, very aware of what you're doing. I was diving last week, and I had the opportunity to dive this week as well, and I turned it down. And the only reason I've turned it down is I've not had the opportunity of fully drying out my dry suit yet.
Wow.
Because it's been so wet, I haven't been able to dry it out. And I'm very conscious that if I go from one fishery to another fishery with a wet dry suit, I might be transferring something. So the first thing I do whenever I get home, and I understand fully that there's going to be guys that aren't in a position to be able to do this because of where they live and how they live, etc., etc., but the first thing that happens is everything comes out and it's dried.
Yeah.
And, you know, in an ideal situation, what happens is the first thing that happens is it comes home, it gets rained on, and then it dries.
Yeah.
Because it almost has a little bit of a washout first. And, you know, this is where we've got to question stink bags. This is where you've absolutely got to take your slings, in particular, your weigh slings, out of your weigh sling pouches and dry them off. You know, even if you can just rinse them out. And there's no excuse for not being able to do that. Worst case scenario, which is a real pain in the backside, but if you're a thoughtful angler, it's something that you would do if you don't have another way of doing it. Take it down the garage and give it a jet wash.
Mm.
It'll cost you a quid to take your stinky stuff down there. Just give it a quick jet wash off. It'll take you 2 or 3 minutes, 5 minutes maybe to do it, and it'll cost a pound because you'll be able to do 2 slings within a pound's worth of jet wash time.
Yeah.
And you know, the very fact that we're cleaning these off will be a massive, massive difference because believe you me, over the last 5 years, we've been seeing KHV spread, and this jump to carp fisheries this year is only the start of it. And I can see it being a really, really serious problem in the future.
Yes, definitely. You know, it'd be obviously CFAS are the key to this, aren't they? They can give grants and stuff, can they?
Well, the CFAS guys are researching. There's two areas that they work at. CFAS is the centre for the European Centre for Fisheries and Aquatic Studies. So they look at everything to do with fish and fisheries and fishing, both in the sea and in freshwater. But you've also got the Environment Agency laboratories at Brampton. So, for example, they do two obvious things, Brampton. The obvious thing number one is that if you want to get a movement order, you have to get your fish health checked if they're going into an unenclosed water or alternatively outside your area. So before you get your Section 30 movement order, you've got to send your fish off for health check. So they will either do it, or alternatively, if there's a problem, they will come out and they will take a fish and they will autopsy it as well. So, you know, they're problem solvers with that. But also what they do is they do research into fish diseases as well. So the laboratories at Brampton are really, really interesting. And at some stage for the TV series, we're hoping to be able to get in there and see what goes on behind the scenes. That was one of the things that we were going to be doing down at Weymouth this week as well, but that's been put backwards for a while. It's stuff like this that's vitally important. Just going back into the TV series, not wanting to plug it too much. But this is one of the things that we're doing in that each program is an hour long. The first part of it will be a fun thing. Part two and part four will be the main challenge, a little bit like, you know, Top Gear when they have a big thing that goes on that they go into, dip out and come back in again.
Yeah.
But part three will be something that's fishing related but isn't necessarily fishing. So, for example, today I've got my co-presenter Andy Ford. He's out with a volunteer bailiff service, should I say, the volunteer bailiff service, and also the police going out on Environment Agency raids just to find out exactly what they do. And at the same time, He's going to be asking them about, you know, how they can improve the service that they do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it isn't just a case of, you know, this is, aren't the Environment Agency great or aren't the VBS great? It's like, right, let's have a look at what the issues are and how can they be solved from both sides. We want to get into Brampton and have a chat with the people there and also into CFAS, talking about exactly the KHV issue that you and I are talking about now. What is it? How does it transfer? What do we actually know about it? What can we do to try and prevent it?
Yeah.
And I think, if we can assist with the education of that, we're going a long way to preventing its spread. But for the moment, the only thing that we do know works is making sure everything's dry. Inoculations are all very well and good. Dips are all very well and good. You know, treating your fish are all very well and good. But actually, the prevention of moving it in the first instance is much, much better. And, you know, that means just drying everything off, because a waterborne, whatever it is, can't survive if there isn't water.
Well, I know Kevin's been very proactive here. It sounds like you guys are behind it. It seems like everybody needs to join forces, I think, when it comes here. I'm sure, you know, that Danny at Corda has obviously invested in UK fishing with the embryo project, yeah, with embryo and stuff. Well, yeah. You know, this is something where everybody can come together, I think, because we're much stronger as a group. I know Kevin's a big fan of yours as well, Rob, and if you can move things along or direct things,
I'll perhaps give him a ring. We can have a chat. You know, there's quite a lot of movement in the carp world. This is something else we'll touch on, actually, because it's sort of related to everything. But obviously, you know, the Carp Society is coming back on stream now, and hopefully by January time things will have resolved themselves there. There's a few more legal issues to go at, but hopefully that will resolve itself, and there'll be proper carp organisation representation through the Carp Society for all of these things that we're talking about. But in the interim, my work with Sport England and also working with the Angling Trust, one of the things that I've been discussing with them is the representation of carp fishing a little bit more, and how the Angling Trust can reach out to carp anglers, and also how carp angling can assist the Angling Trust. Because it isn't just a case of what the Angling Trust do for us. It should be a case of what can everybody do to promote fishing, and particularly in our area, what can we do to promote carp fishing? So there's been a reasonable amount of movement there. And I think it might actually be this week that the press release will be coming out as well. But we've now got a lead on carp fishing within the Angling Trust. Fortunately, is yours truly, or unfortunately, depending on the workload thing. But it just means that I can get carp fishing issues directly into the Angling Trust heads. For example, Mark Owen, who's a very, very hard worker on fisheries. Many people won't even know who he is. He's one of these blokes that does an awful lot of work behind the scenes, but doesn't really do anything at all to do with publicity. But he's the guy that works with all the big organisations. He's the guy that works with the government. He's the guy that listens to what everybody's got to say, problems-wise, and tries to find some sort of a solution for them. So, you know, and I know that he is very much behind the initiative to try and assist with any way that he can with carp fishing. And, you know, I'll put my hand up now and say that I've been very critical of the Trust in the past about not representing carp fishing properly. Because, you know, you look at it and think, well, what do the Angling Trust actually do for carp fishing? Yeah. The reality of it is, now I've found out a little bit more, they do an awful lot. They're just not very good at telling people.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, the first thing I would say is the three-rod licence. So we've now got a situation where carp anglers can fish three rods on, or they can buy a third-rod licence rather than having to buy two-rod licences.
Yeah.
Immediately, what the Angling Trust have done is lobbied, they've listened to what people said, they've lobbied the Environment Agency to make the position smoother, and the Angling Trust have saved every single carp angler that buys two rods, they've saved them 15 quid.
Yeah, well, we've only had a 20-year carp boom to make that happen, I guess.
You know, there is that. We can all jump up and down and we say too little, too late. What I can say is that, you know, I've been with the organisation for 12 months, and what I'm seeing at the moment is more of a change and a view towards carp fishing more. And, you know, yes, I get it. Yes, it should have happened a long time ago. It didn't. But it's happened now.
Yeah.
And there's loads of things that haven't happened in the past that should have happened by now, and they haven't. But you know what? They will.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's so big that, you know, the carp fishing industry is so big they can't ignore it now. I think it may be, you know, shutting the stable door or any other cliche, but at the end of the day, things are going to happen a lot quicker in the future because, like it or not, that's how the industry has moved forward.
Exactly that. Exactly that. But they, you know, they're aware of it. Perhaps it might be a little bit of a case of, if you don't talk to your neighbour, you don't know what your neighbour does. And you know, this is one of the things with it, because there is, believe me, within the organisations, be that Environment Agency, be it police, be it CFAS, be it Voluntary Bailiff, be it Institute of Fishery Management, be it all of these organisations, there's an awful lot going on. And the problem is that when something else needs to come into there, it needs to make room for itself.
Yeah.
A lot of the time people don't know. And, you know, there'll be stuff that would be really, really important for you guys to know, but you don't know about it yet.
Yeah.
So as a result, you don't make any room for it.
As far as, you know, the PR department of the EA and Angling Trust, I guess they've got a long way to go to repair the damage that's been caused, mainly by the predation issue.
Yes.
But, you know, with carp anglers, at every single post that EA, since their blunder last year, every single post they make gets three or more what you're doing about otters type comments underneath. Yeah, yeah. Whatever the post is related to, it could be canal locks, it could be anything. And they're still finding the backlash from that faux pas they made last year.
Unquestionably, you know, that was a big mistake, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good in the way, you know, I still smile to myself every time they make a post. I look in the comments now, and I don't have to look more than two or three before I see somebody, what are you doing about otters, you know?
Yes.
Which is great, because they cannot ignore it. And but I think, as far as, you know, being grateful for the other things that they do, it's going to take a long way before people don't think of a negative before they see the positives. You know, they've got a lot more work to do yet, I think. And
yeah, I think, you know, I'm not here to jump up and down and defend or promote either side, but what I will say is that there is movement now.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that movement, for example, I'll give you one very simple example, the Angling Improvement Fund. And the Angling Improvement Fund is a fund of money that comes out from rod license sales to improve fisheries. This is where the marketing and communications haven't really got through that well in the past. But see, I didn't know too much about it until fairly recently, probably the last 12 months. But years ago, give it 2 years. Whatever, there was discussions about, if we can't fence, is there any compensation available? And there was nothing. And then 30 grand was made available for the whole of the country, and then actually, you know, that wasn't applied for because it wasn't publicized well, or if it was applied for, it's, you know, not many people knew about it. But then it went to 50, and then it went to 100, and actually the Environment Agency, for the next slice of funding, I think, are putting £450,000 up.
Yeah.
So there's nearly £500,000 going into angling improvement funding, which is to develop fisheries. And it's open not just to open access and club waters, as it used to be. It's open to anyone now, because the argument there is that everybody that fishes, whether it's a private syndicate or whether it's a public access club lake or whether it's just an open access free water, they still need a rod license.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're turning around saying, well, it's only public amenity that can apply for this, then that's restricting people that are inputting into the fund in the first instance.
Yeah.
So, you know, the next slice of funding is coming out soon. It's a massive amount of money to go into fishery improvement, and there's a large element of that that can go for fencing.
Yeah.
So, you know, suddenly, is it solving a problem? No, not yet. But that's being worked on in a different area. But if it's not solving the problem of predation, can it compensate or assist it in some way, shape or form? And the way that it assists it is, look, there is funding available, and if you're in a position where you can fence your fishery, but you haven't got the money to do it, apply to the Angling Improvement Fund, because they might be able to put something on the table. And I think the grants were up to 5,000, now they're going up to 10,000. So, you know, there is money available there to fence your fishery now, if you haven't got any money to be able to do it.
What, private fisheries?
Private fisheries.
Commercial, yeah. Fisheries as well.
Commercial fisheries as well, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, again, this is, I might get in trouble for saying something that isn't out on a press release yet. I know it's due out soon. But anyway, look, I've said it now, so crack on. It's out there. And if it's out there, then happy days. But yeah, you've got some, yeah, there will be money available at some stage in the near future for Angling Improvement Fund fence funding.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have a few more comments down here, but some of them are kind of things that might have been better in earlier on in the chat, and maybe drop a bit more negative, but we're finishing on the positive, so let's save more controversy for next time, I think.
Is that why you get me on?
Not at all. No, I mean, I had a point earlier that was kind of following on from the you know, the credibility issues and what counts and what doesn't. I was going to actually introduce the kind of the money side of angling. I think where a lot of people have a problem these days is, maybe it's jealousy, maybe it's whatever, but now if you've got deep pockets, you can improve the size of fish you're going to catch by fishing some of these home fen type places, but having a bait boat that's £3,500, that's got an underwater camera and a GPS that takes it out to the spot, you don't even have to drive in. There's an elite big fish scene now that I'm seeing a trend of, even lakes that we know about. You know, Eric's Angling is one. There's been the Eric's Willows Lake that's, you know, got quite a few 50 pounders in now, and one approaching 50. All the fish getting caught with underwater cameras on bait boats and on spots that would be impossible to fish otherwise, and them guys are the ones that are catching the fish. There's other such examples, you know, I'm hearing stories of various different lakes. So generalize a bit, add all this together. Basically, if you've got a few quid, you can buy yourself 50 pounders. And
I'm a bit miffed at the fact that Lewis Hamilton can drive a bit quicker than me in his Formula One car.
This is the argument, obviously. You know, he can afford a McLaren F1, you know, the road version of it, and drive faster than anyone else. Well, technically he can't, because we can all drive 70 miles an hour. But I think fishing's, it becomes a bit more personal, you know. I mean, you know, you see somebody drive past in a Bentley, there's a certain type of person that's going to think, wow, I wonder what he does to have, you know, been that successful in life. Could I do it? And there's another sort of guy that thinks, fucking wanker, fucking look at that smarmy prick, you know. It's a different personality thing. And I think with fishing being almost a way of life for a lot of people, it's more than a hobby. It's something that, you know, the great bit of it is it makes us all passionate. And I think that same thing when, you know, you've struggled to catch a 30 pounder and there's Joe Bloggs catching 70 pounders out of lakes that, you know, if you got two grand or 1500 quid, you can have a ticket.
But I see it and fully understand it, but I don't quite get why it matters to someone else what someone else catches. And it goes back to the argument that I was saying earlier, that, you know, I'll name an angler now, and he said it himself, Steve Weir. The guy that's been over to EuroAqua. And he caught a 100 pounder, he had a 90 pounder. You know, he's caught a massive, he's probably caught more 30 kilo plus fish than anyone else. And certainly if you were to take a year as an example, I think it was last year, he caught ridiculous amounts. Don't know exactly what it is. Steve's a nice bloke. He's a successful businessman, sold his business. You know, he's a reasonably good angler. He's been around a reasonable period of time. If he wrote down what his catch list was, it's phenomenal.
Almost all of them,
I should think, from EuroAqua, and he said he spent just over 30 grand in the process.
Wow.
Now, to me, unbelievable. If I could afford to spend that money, I absolutely wouldn't. Although I don't know, because I haven't got that sort of money, and if I had the chance and I got enough money to think, I'll spend 30 grand on a fishing trip or fishing trips, would I do it? I don't know. But fair dues to him. He's had a great time. He's really, really enjoyed it. He's caught a lot of good fish. It's made him, hopefully, pretty happy with what he's done. Does it have any effect on you and me, Jay?
Not at all.
Did you even know about it before I said it?
I did know of his case, I did know. I had 20 grand in my head, but 30. I know. One of my friends who's also been to EuroAqua quite a bit, another wealthy businessman, shout out to Harry if he's listening to this, is Harry the piano man. He sells pianos. He reminds me of
Billy Joel sang a song about him a while ago, didn't he?
Reminds me of, if you've ever seen the film Snatch, Dougie what's he called, Doug the Head, the Mike Reed character in Snatch, Jewish guy, or big Jewish guy in this case. That's Harry, you know,
Uncle Abby.
And put yourself pianos. He's been to all these places abroad, you know. He went to Bled many years ago. He's a bream angler, but he, you know, he's got a few quid and he's first on these things when they come about. He's been to Euroacra and he actually caught the record fish last year. He caught it at 96, same fish that's the world record now. He's a pleasure angler. He's got a few quid. He doesn't care about politics and he's not, you know, he doesn't go carp fishing week in, week out. He's got the money. Where am I going to go fishing? Oh, there's this place over there. It costs $2,000. He had his kit sent out in flight cases a month before he went. He had all his bait sent out in coffins, tipped up there, you know, on the flight. Yeah. And it was a comfortable week's fishing and ended up
catching. He's had a great week's fishing. He's caught what he wanted to catch, presumably. I didn't even know. So it didn't have any effect on me.
Exactly. But the point is, I mean, you see on a smaller scale on a syndicate lake, right? So you get a syndicate lake, 25% of the syndicate lake are probably going to catch the bottom 20% of numbers throughout the year, just happy to be there. It's a break from work and, you know, they're in there, they're the first guys at the work parties and they're just happy to be spending the time. There's 10% that are the people, maybe like I've been in the past, that are obsessed about catching the A team, knocking them off as quick as possible, fishing every minute God sends until they you know, conquer the lake type thing. And then you've got all the other guys in the middle that are maybe a little bit envious or condescending about the 10% that are really going for it and they're, you know, clocking them off and moving on to the next syndicate and clocking them off and moving on to the next guy. And they're a guy that maybe is as passionate as the 10% of people that are going for it, but they aren't making the sacrifices. You know, they won't take the time off work, they've got family holidays, and you know, they might get 1 week's holiday fishing a year, and they fish the odd overnighter and the lake's rammed full of the 10% people that are going for it, and they're the ones that end up bitter and you know, that are like, well, if I had this bait deal, or if I had his time, or you know. So it happens on every syndicate, I think, to a degree.
It does, but I can't countenance that in any way, shape, or form, because, or endorse it in any way, shape, or form, because it's exactly what you've just said. It's the bitterness. It's almost a benefit culture of, oh, it's all right for him because he can do this.
Yeah.
And whether the it that he can do is he gets his bait cheap, stroke free. He can get there on a Friday morning rather than a Friday evening, whether he fishes midweek or whatever. And that is absolutely down to the one thing that we've discussed earlier, and that is ego.
Yeah.
And it's insecurity. If you're so insecure that you have to be bitter about someone else's capture, then the first thing you should genuinely do is just have a look at your own life.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, you know, why should I be bitter or insecure about someone else catching something? And, you know, when you're on a syndicate, particularly if there's target fish that you want, I won't say I've been gutted, but I've been disappointed when someone else has caught it.
Yeah.
Because I think, oh, bugger, I was going to go this weekend. It's just come.
Yeah, especially if it's a once-a-year fish or twice
exactly.
a year.
Exactly. So, you know, but that's the element of competition. And a good sportsman, effectively, you know, you take the knocks when you don't do very well, or when someone does better than you, should I say, and you dust yourself up, pick yourself up, and you go out again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know he's very, very flamboyant, and I know that he can be seemingly quite arrogant, but I don't know if you follow Conor McGregor at all.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he's a very interesting character. The psychology of that man is amazing. How he plays the game. Whereas when you see him in reality, he's very, very different. And like, you know, you all the trash talk with the Nate Diaz fight, how he picked Nate Diaz off, he knew what Diaz's strengths were and he counted them straight away. And it was such a close fight because they were amazingly evenly matched, but Conor beat him by being cleverer.
Yeah.
That's why he wasn't necessarily the better fighter. He was the cleverer man, which allowed him to fight cleverer. And when you looked afterwards, I've never seen McGregor go straight to somebody afterwards and congratulate him.
Exactly.
He's normally up on the fence or whatever, but he knew that he'd had a very, very good fight and he got a lot of respect for Diaz. And you look at it, all the trash beforehand, and I don't think he was going up and whispering in his ear that he was a tosser. He was going up and it was, you could see the respect.
100%, yeah. Diaz that let himself down in the after fight interviews, I think, you know, kind of denying Conor's win almost.
Yeah, exactly. He would have been, you know, he'd have been a much, much bigger man if he'd have turned out and gone, wow, you know what?
One
what
each bring on round three, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and that's it. And I think sometimes people can be too concerned about what other people are doing. And also, it's not fair because he's doing this. It's not fair he's doing that. It's not fair he can get this and I can't. Well, do something about it then. Yeah. Either get it so you can compete on even terms, or if you think the playing field isn't even, don't compete on it. Or if you have to compete on a playing field that isn't even, then put it out of your mind. Because, you know, I'm not going to get in a ring with a heavyweight boxer. I might be the same weight as him, but I'm not going to be the same skill base as him. And I appreciate that as soon as I step through the ring, within, I probably won't even hear the bell echoing. It would just be lighter go out before the bell's finished. But, you know, that's it. Whereas I tell you what, let's go out and let's run up a hill with a bag of sand on the back. And yeah. I reckon I could probably beat the heavyweight boxer at that. I know he's going to be fit and he's going to have endurance, but it's a slightly different thing. And I fancy my chances of that. And you know what? If he beat me, I'd be the first one to congratulate him.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, we're both logical human beings. I've never got upset about somebody else's success. I'm the opposite. I look, what are they doing that I'm not? You know, what can I do to improve me? Not trying to bring the other person down to my level. You know,
exactly. No point.
It's a different mentality. You know, I've always looked at, you know, as I said with the analogy of, you know, the guy that spits on the Bentley that drives past and the guy goes, what do you do? You know, tell me, can I do it?
Yeah.
You know, or what do I need to do? It's a mentality thing, but it's, you know, sadly, I think logical people are in the minority as a rule, so it's just something you have to deal with. But I mean, you know, whether it's motivation, skill level, drive, it's very different sometimes to, especially in a very working class sport traditionally, that's now a very expensive sport. You know, money becomes a leveler. You know,
oh, unquestionably, it used to be time, didn't it?
It used to be time, yeah, and yeah. Some people thought it was free bait, which was always the biggest fallacy in fishing. That does.
What are we going to call them then, Jay? Let's, because originally it was time bandits, and then it was bait bandits. What are we going to call them now? It's going to be cash bandits.
Cash bandits. Yeah.
So basically, cash bandit. You heard it here first, guys. That's it. If someone's going out and buying themselves a lot of units, then they're cash bandits.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this, we've discussed this a few times, the technology in fishing. I mean, where's the line drawn with, you know, as we discussed earlier, you know, the British record currently was caught on a bait boat. Now, you know, if that was maybe now and maybe next year, the British record will be caught when the guy, you know, spotted the fish in a bay in the corner with his drone that was, you know, transferring live feed. So he takes the watercraft out of the equation because he spotted the carp in a corner with a drone. Is the drone's told him the GPS, he's plugged that into his bait boat. The bait boat's driven itself out to the spot via GPS, dropped the bait on a winch. He's checked that it's fine on the spot with the underwater camera, and then he's reeled it in when it's ripped. Like, that's probably already happened. Maybe not with the record. Yeah. But it's, I know a lot of the European anglers are using those sort of systems to catch fish because
absolutely,
they have
the count over there.
Yeah. So like, you know, what was the line crossed when we didn't have a split cane and rod anymore? Was it crossed when we had a fixed ball reel? Was it crossed when but I don't know, carbon fiber rods were introduced? Like, at what point was the technology line crossed? Will it ever be crossed? Is it fair game to use anything available to you?
Can I throw another question in?
Yeah.
Why is there a line?
You got to dive in and grab it?
Well, the line is crossed.
Yeah.
Why is there a line? That's the question I would ask. Well, when was the line crossed? Why does there need to be a line?
It's the credibility thing again, you know. It's somebody who uses watercraft and is really carpy and he sneaks around and he finds the fish and, you know, he free lines a bit of bread to him using absolute skill, or somebody else that's, you know, got a map, he looks at on a computer screen and go, oh, there's a big fish over there, programming the coordinates, zip, 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 and it drops a rig perfectly presented in front of its nose. I mean, they're very different. Yes, it's personal. If one guy's happy doing it the electronic way and the other guy's, you know, done an Ollie Davis and snagged it out the edge on camera, they both feel happy when they've caught the fish.
I think, again, you know the ones that you've caught well.
Yeah.
You know the ones that have been caught really hard. You know the ones that have been those, shall I have a tactical change? Because sod all's happened for Lord knows how long. I've been here 3.5 weeks and I haven't seen a bubble. and then you think, I'm going to move it, and I'm only going to move it 2 inches, but you catch one half an hour later, that ain't coincidence, that means a lot to you, you've done it. And you know when it's a good one. And you know that if you jumped on a plane to Euroacre and shipped everything over there and knocked a 50-pounder out in the first 5 minutes of fishing there, you'd know what that was worth. Yeah. You'd still enjoy the experience, but you'd know what it was worth. And that's what we all need to remember. It's worth what it is to us. It
yeah,
doesn't matter
you're right.
what it's worth to other people. And I will always come back to that same argument. You know, somebody can be out there now catching the biggest haul of 50-pounders that anyone else has ever caught in the whole history of England. Why should I be jealous? One, I'm not there. Two, I don't know the bloke. It turns out that he's actually been cheating, and they're all a complete and utter load of wrong'uns. He used a bait boat, a helicopter, a GPS and a drone to find them all. He got someone to walk his gear to the swim. He got someone to cast his rod out. He got someone to strike it. He wandered out from somebody else cooking him dinner, and he just went there to take the rod off the bloke who was just about to net it for him. He's held the rod for 2 seconds, and he's gripping and grinning a 50-pounder like an idiot. If he's happy, fine. I think he's a complete knob. But, oh, doesn't matter. If he's enjoyed it, fine. It really won't accept me in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, it's personal. What if it does affect you? If he's on your syndicate and he's the only one catching fish because of a non-level playing field, such as money, his helicopter, his GPS, whatever, is it just to you to say, right, I'm not going to fish this syndicate?
I think, well, if it's within the rules, then fine, you accept the rules on what they are. And if someone interprets the rules to allow them to do something during that year, then it's up to the fishery owner stroke manager to ensure that if it's upsetting the rest of the membership, it needs to change for next year. Because remember, you know, rules aren't there just for the purpose of the owner to set rules. They're there for the balance of the syndicate. And I run a syndicate, and what I want is everybody getting on with each other. My main rules on my syndicate are don't upset me. Don't upset the bloke that lives in the house. Don't upset the fish, and don't upset the lake.
Yeah.
Then don't upset each other. And as long as I don't get any grief, that's fine.
Yeah.
And you know, as long as none of those things are upset, then you can do more or less whatever you want. So, you know, I think it just comes into when people are being upset. And if there's no rule against having a helicopter to drop your bait in, then, you know, if it upsets 90% of the members, you've got to have a think about it next year and say, well, you know what, we're going to ban helicopters.
Yeah, yeah. Sense, as always. Common sense.
That's all it is your starting point should always be common sense and basics. And whether that's rigs, whether that's fishing, that's location, whether that's whatever you're doing, just life. Start on a common sense thing, because sometimes we always look for the most complicated solution to things. When a lot of the time it's actually the most simple solution, which would be the best one. And that 95% of the time, I think, comes down to common sense. The problem is that some people don't have common sense, so they don't have that logistical thought or that logical thought process.
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's leave it there. It's been a long one, and I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it.
No problem at all. Nice speaking to you as ever. Carp Society show this weekend.
Yes, it is. Sandown.
So, Sandown. Me and Crowe are, it's like Take That. The boy band's back together again. Look, I would say it's for one night only, but it's actually for two. So me and Crowe Bags are on stage. Okay. There's a man that catches far too many fish.
Yes.
So we're going to be, he needs banning. We're going to be talking about some of our times gone by and, you know, just having a bit of a laugh, probably taking a piss out of each other far too much, but that's what we do and we quite like doing. So, we'll have a little crack at that. So if you're around, do come down and see us at the Carp Society show. Other than that, on Facebook, don't forget those, predatory fish.
Fantastic.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
Say something we'd forgotten about, Mark, as well, and that was the competition winners for, was it the Open Access Carp Waters, which I'm sure you can get on the Gifts for Anglers site as well. They basically gave us two books to give away, didn't we, for pictures of fish that were caught from public waters. Did you have a trawl through them? Did you pick us some winners?
Yes, it's been like a step back in time. But yeah. Yeah, apologies again for just totally forgetting. We're old and senile. But I've had a trawl through. There's some cracking fish there as well. You know, I've probably spent a bit too long looking at them than what I should, but I selected a couple, not on any size or anything, but just what I thought deserved a prize. The first one, Andy Clark. It's not a massive fish, but it was a nice common from a free stretch of the River Dee.
Ah.
He's been on the river, so I think that deserves it. And also, the other one, I've got a Matt P. Jones, which was cracking, fully scaled from Atlantic Wharf. That was when it used to be open access and free for all. Now, is that the same place where Alan Blair paid a visit not so long ago?
Yes, yeah, for the urban banks. Thought it,
yeah. Yeah, so one from a river, one from middle of a housing estate with the looks of it, with flats around it. But what a nice, fully scaled it was. So, well done. I'll be sending you messages and asking for your addresses, and we will get these books out to you. Sorry about the delay.
Yep, and if you want to have a look at the open access Cart Waters, big thanks to them for giving us a couple of copies of the book to give away. And what a fantastic looking book it is as well. It's nice to know waters are actually accessible. None of these private syndicates are dead man's shoes to get on. Check it out, and I'm pretty sure it will be at Gifts for Anglers. What next, Mark? Listeners' Ooh. Questions?
Yeah, let's get stuck in. Let's our brains be picked. Now, this is another kind of two-part question from one person, Chris Lawrence. This is quite appropriate for this time of year as well. Question one: how would you approach fishing a shallow, coloured lake in the winter? I can only fish days due to work. It's too far away to bait up regularly.
Ask us a question.
Over to you.
I think in the winter, I've had lots of daytime bites anyway. I mean, there's always a period, and I've done a lot of winter fishing in the past. It's like a kind of a lunchtime period, like a 12 o'clock till 2 o'clock. I mean, you could sometimes, when you find the bite time in the winter, you can set your clock by it. It can literally be within 5 minutes at the same time every day. Have you ever found that, Mark?
Definitely. You know, it can be quite erratic bite times as well. You know, dusk, you know, lunchtime, mid-afternoon, which is dusk at the minute, looking out the window. It's,
yeah, it's dark, 20 to 4, and it's pretty dark outside.
It's grim up north.
Yeah, I mean, I found them to be pretty predictable in the winter. There might be very short feeding spells, but I also find you can have hits in the winter because the fish are grouped. If you do get it right and the fish decide to feed, you can end up with quite a few fish, I've always found. I mean, I don't know much about his type of lake. I always find lakes without much weed fish better in winter. Quite often the fish, there's a reason why they are where they are, I think, in winter, you know, back of cold winds. I always find fish like to be near shallow areas in winter because if they do get a bit of sun, even on the coldest day, you know, the water's significantly warmer. So, you know, I always look for like the shallower areas. What was the full question?
Hey, can only fish days due to work. It's too far away to bait up regular. But even if you're only fishing once a week, I think I'd still be trickling bait into lightly looking spots, especially if you're fishing at all winter.
Yeah, I like particle in the winter as well. Find it doesn't fill them up as quickly. You're fishing for bites, so you never want to put loads of bait in. But I mean, I would. Any indication in the winter is worth taking note of. Any fish sighting, because the fish are usually going to be together. So I think information's way more important in the winter than it is the rest of the year, because the fish are not moving about as much. So if you can see one pop its head out, or, you know, there's a reason why it's in that area, there's a good chance it'll be in that area for quite a long time. So really keep your eyes peeled, looking for creases in the water, tail patterns, obviously showing fish if they're sticking their nuts out. But I like to fish for liners in the winter as well, because I would generally keep moving swims. If you really don't know where the fish are and nothing's happening, fish a different swim every single time until you get some sort of indication. You know, if there are fish in a swim, you know, don't fish really slack lines, fish sort of semi-slack lines with your line running through the swim, and try and, you know, you're just looking for any indication, whether that's a visual indication or something bumping the line. So, you know, fishing for liners in winter, deliberately fishing for liners in winter, not trying to get your line out of the way, is something that's worked for me in the past. You know, any information is valuable, I think, at that time of year. So just keep moving around the lake until you find an area. I wouldn't set my stall out in one area and just keep baiting. I would never do that in the winter. I would want to try and get as close to fish. It's very rare you get on fish and don't know it, I think. So I would take it as, if there's no indication, then the fish are not there. So keep moving until you get some indication.
Yeah, I mean, just one show can give away the presence of quite a lot of fish.
Exactly.
So, you know, ignore things at your peril. But bubblers are an always one in winter, especially on coloured waters. You know, like this be coloured because the bottom is, you know, maybe a bit silty, clay even. So, you know, silty waters do give off the bubbles a lot easier. I've caught quite a few fish off bubbles in winter. And also, look out for small fish activity, because your small fish, they're likely to be in the area where the water is just that, you know, slight half a degree warmer. And if they're there, there's a good chance a carp will going to be there. So, again, just cast a single out to that sort of area for an hour and just watch, see what happens. As Jamie says, fish for your liners. Stay active.
Any more questions, Matt?
Yeah, we've got a second part of the question from Chris Lawrence. He says, I'm planning fishing days my local lake. I can bait up easily. It has a large head of bream, and the lake has a history of doing night bites. Is it possible to change the feeding pattern of the fish to make them feed more in daylight hours?
Ask us a question.
Interesting question.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Now, my initial reaction would be no, because the bite time seems to change at different times of year anyway. And I'm not 100% sure why that is. I'd like to ask somebody who knows better. I'm aware of the patterns, you know. Autumn time, two in the morning till seven in the morning seems to be a time in autumn. And also, like, just dusk, like 5 p.m., something like that. I've had hot times. But that varies at different times of year. You know, certain times of year where the bites are like 7 a.m. in the morning to 11 a.m. in the morning, and I don't think it changes anything to do with something we can control, such as baiting. I mean, if there are a lot of nuisance fish in the lake and you know they're eating the bait, making sure you bait up at the times you want them to be feeding, I mean, I guess that could help. I don't know. If I had to say, I don't think you can change the feeding times. What about you?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was down to oxygen levels in the water, because I remember your chat with Simon Scott. It is a while since I've listened to that one, but I do seem to recall him talking about the oxygen levels. It changed quite a lot, even just through a 24-hour period.
That's right, yeah. I mean, that's probably the main reason why fish bite times change. You know, it's how easy they can digest, you know, when they actually feel hungry, which might be dictated by conditions, because of, as you said, more oxygen in the water helps them digest food more easily. Water temperatures at certain times of year, when it's red hot, you know, the carp tend to feed at the coolest times of day. When it's red hot in the middle of the daytime, they don't often feed when they're just sunbathing. So I think it's probably more to do with water temperature and oxygen levels, as you said. So can you change that? I don't think so.
No, but there is just different things you can do, you know, like daytime, they're not getting their heads down, the zigs, the stalking.
Definitely zigs in winter as well. I think especially if you've got daytime, even if they're not feeding and they're cruising about, you know, in the middle layers, or if you can get on fish, I would definitely be fishing zigs. You know, that can nab you the bites, I think.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that one.
Cool. By the way, everybody check out VIP Carp Holidays. I'm starting to book some holidays with a bit of a difference. Usually including like a house or a villa or something like that, you know, facilities for the families. You can check stuff out at vipcarpholidays.com. Reese and I are working on the website as we speak, trying to get all the information up there, but there's quite a lot of pictures up there. There's a fantastic holiday with a difference on the River Lot, which is right down in the south of France. It's in a non-flood area. There's about 70 meters of private bank. It comes with a pool, a private pool, a beautiful villa, table tennis tables, loads of facilities, bikes and all sorts. The fishing is amazing. It's done carp to £60 on that stretch, catfish to over 100. It's ace for the predator fishing. There's loads of other species there. Perfect place for a family holiday. It literally is paradise. Yeah, should be going there over the winter sometime myself. I'll definitely do an in-session feature when I go and check it out by Jim Lightfoot, who's an experienced European angler. He's a fantastic guide, can really put you right. And, you know, if you're fed up of fishing French commercially stocked lakes, what about a bit of river fishing? On the famous River Lot. It sounds absolutely fantastic. He also has a cruiser, like a boat, where you can go and do it, either a guided trip with Jim, or if you have some boat knowledge, he'll let you and somebody else take the boat, or you can go off exploring down the river and live on the boat, sleep on the boat. He does week-long trips there. He's actually doing a special offer in March and April. It's only £800 for the villa. Villa comes complete with all the facilities, bikes, pool, table tennis, all the private fishing area. It's only £800 for a week, which is great value. You can get two families down there if you so wanted. And that's March and April 2017. Go to vipcarpholidays.com for more info. We're also booking for St. Armand Leisure, which is a place we've featured before in the Carpcast. Many Carpcast listeners visited there last year. There's only 10 weeks available for 2017 now. It's not far off sold out, but there is a few decent weeks. Again, you get a fantastic farmhouse which can take two families. There's your own private 4.5 acre lake that's absolutely stuffed full of fish. It's definitely a runs water, perfect again for taking the kids, the missus and whatever. It's in a beautiful little French village. The farmhouse again has got loads of facilities, lots of games and stuff, again a table tennis table. It's absolutely stunning. I've got a load of new shots of the inside of the house. Even though it's a 170 year old stone built house, it's maintained to a really high standard, all the truly authentic original features. It's just down the road from the lake. It's got satellite TV, everything you could ever need on a family holiday, including the games lounge and a barn, and it's absolutely fantastic. If you want more info on that, one of our listeners did a in-session feature, didn't he, from the lake. Can you remember what episode it was, Mark?
I can. I knew you was going to ask this one, so I've done my research. It was Ben Smethurst, and it's on episode 48.
Yeah, go and check it out. Who was on that episode? Was it Briggsy?
It was Steve Briggs, yes.
Yeah, I remember. So if you want it from the horse's mouth, he was actually did some recording from the venue. As I said, there's only 10 weeks available for next year now. It's nearly sold out. But we are taking bookings for 2018, and it's a place, it's a must-visit place if you're looking for somewhere to take the family, somewhere that's really comfortable. Get some authentic French fishing near Limoges, then that's the place. They also have another lake on there which we're booking, which is Cassenlac, typical sort of big fish French water, private lake hire. It can take either 6 or 8 anglers if you fancy your own lake, again in the middle of France. Then get on vipcarpholidays.com and check it out. There's all sorts of contact details on there. Any questions, and you can give us a call or email, and we'll set you up with a fantastic French holiday. I believe you've seen Worth a Look as well, Mark.
Worth a Look.
I have, yeah. This caught my eye because, well, I love a big scaly carp, and it was a Facebook page, Simo's Super Stockies.
Hmm.
I think it's fair to say that you know, Mark Simmons, he's had a bit of a bad rep for a lot of these carp over the years of being fat, ugly slugs. And well, to put it bluntly, but you know, he does deserve a lot of credit too. I mean, I don't think there's many carp anglers out there who've not caught a simo. I know I've had my fair share of you.
Certainly have.
Anyway, have a look at these Simo Super Stockies, because it's supplying, you know, bland slugs no more. There is some absolutely stonking fish on there. I'm just looking at some of the pictures now. And wow, there's lovely dark scaly fish on there. There's also Lee Morris, I think he's doing a bit of work with Mark Simmons. He's holding a few of them up. And if you don't want to catch some of these in the future, then you need to buy a pole and go catch some roach on the canal, because there's some mint fish.
Should have a new brand name, aren't they? Because Simo's, everybody pitches one type of fish now, don't they? So
yeah,
you know, round football-y shape, fast growing fish that don't seem to live that long. It does seem to be the more scales on a fish, they don't grow quite as big, but they do seem to have more longevity. I'd like to know more about that, actually, why that is. I mean, I assume fish were bred with no scales to make it easier for eating back in the day, were they? I mean, how do you create a strain that has no scales?
Yeah, especially when the throwback is the common carp, covered in scales. How did they originally come up with the mirrors and leathers? How did they do it?
There's a few big commons knocking around the country these days, aren't there? I mean, I know of 55-pound plus commons. I can think of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 off the top of my head. A couple of them I can't name, but I do know 100% they exist.
I'll tell you about another one we can't name on the podcast when we finished as well.
Right, okay. I know of at least 5 55-pound plus commons off the top of my head. Maybe even 6, actually. This Nashie's got 2. He did have 3, but one's gone now, sadly. The Emperor, sadly believed to be deceased. But he's got the big common in the church and the wood carving in the copse. So they can grow that big with scales.
Yeah, right. Even when you think about linears and fullies, there's even leathers. I believe, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember reading somewhere that the likes of linears and leathers, it was a bit of a throwback, and as a general rule, they don't grow as big. But again, you always get the exception to the rule. I mean, look at Heather. I mean, did you ever see Heather on the bank? Was she a proper nude?
Yeah, I did. She is a proper one. I did see Heather on the bank. What's his name? Ben? Ben someone?
Oh,
you'll know him.
Ben. Is that one of the fellows who did the thinking angler stuff?
That's right, yeah. We used to be Facebook friends, but he deleted me for some reason. Not sure why. Maybe my spamming when I had the bar. I'm not sure. We were friends many, many years ago. But yeah, I forget his surname now. But yeah, when he caught it, I've still got a picture actually. I found him the other day.
Same with linears, is the odd exception there. There's the old caravan park linear, which is well over 50 pound.
Yeah. The
only exception.
Yeah. There's not that many 40 pound plus linears in the country. Same with fully scaled carp. Yeah. They are rare, aren't they? The 40 pound plus ones.
Yeah, mind if these. If these Simo super stockies with all these scales, if they grow as big and as fast as the previous ones, there might be more in a few years.
Mm. Yeah, who knows? Just moving on, we've almost come to the end now, but something I did see on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Which is certainly worthy of a mention and our best wishes. Did you see Martin Clark had a heart attack?
Well, I did not know.
No, his daughter's been posting on his Facebook page saying that he's in hospital. Martin's obviously conscious because he's asked his daughter to post. But he's on my list on the wall of future guests, people that have said they are going to come on the Carpcast for us. And obviously it's very, very sad to hear this. So we wish him all the best, obviously.
Yeah, definitely get well soon, Martin. So I'm sure he's got plenty more carp to catch, so we'd like to hear about them.
Kirsty, his daughter, posted an update on the 18th of November. what is it, 21st today, yeah, the last message was just a quick update on my dad's condition. I know a lot of you are concerned. The news from my mum is that he's stable but still quite ill, as he's picked up a sickness bug while being in hospital. When he is well again, I think he'll be allowed to return home. She thanks everybody for the kind messages of support. So yeah, lots of people wishing him all the best on his Facebook page. But life's too short, you know. We spoke quite a bit about the negativity in carp fishing at the minute. It just puts things into perspective sometimes, isn't it? Look after yourselves. Health is important, and when you don't have it, you wish you had done more to take care of yourself. So I'm sat here with toothache, actually. Pretty bad toothache that I've had for about 3 days and ignored. And you know what? I'm going to go and get it sorted out, because it's horrible feeling not 100%, isn't it? You know, you take it for granted until something goes wrong. So live life to the full. Love each other. Stop being miserable. It's only fishing. We enjoy it. Let's continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, it gives your fellow angler a big cuddle. We all love each other.
Yeah, not after 3 days on the bank, you won't be coming near me. So, yeah, that's it from me.
And me.
And that's it from Mark. Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.